Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, November 13th, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, call-in number is 515-604-9386. Our participant code is 419-303. If you're using a cell and your cell provider blocks or charges for the call, you can call our backup number, 781-838-3728. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send it to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find the banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side. Okay, tonight's scripture reading. Someone's got a mute out there, not sure who. Oh, Brent, you're coming through with something. Maybe you can mute yourself, star 6 to mute. Okay, and star 6 to unmute yourself, too. Okay, let's see. Our scripture reading tonight is Matthew. We're going to pick up where we left off. Chapter 19, verse 13 through 30. So Matthew chapter 19, verse 13 through 30. Then were there brought unto him, that's Jesus, little children, that he should put his hands on them and pray. And the disciples rebuked them. But Jesus said, Suffer the little children, and forbid them not to come unto me, for of such is the kingdom of heaven. And he laid his hands on them and departed thence. And behold, one came and said unto him, Good master, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life? And he said unto him, Why callest thou me good? There is none good but one, that is God. But if thou wilt enter into life, keep the commandments. He saith unto him, Which, Jesus saith, thou shalt do no murder, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness. Honor thy father and thy mother, and thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. The young man saith unto him, All these things have I kept from my youth. What lack I yet? Jesus said unto him, If thou wilt be perfect, go and sell all that thou hast, and give it unto the poor, and thou shalt have treasures in heaven, and come and follow me. But when the young man heard that saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. Then said Jesus unto his disciples, Truly I say unto you, that a rich man shall hardly enter into the kingdom of heaven. And again I say unto you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of God. When his disciples heard it, they were exceedingly amazed, saying, Who then can be saved? But Jesus beheld them and said unto them, With men this is impossible, but with God all things are possible. Then answered Peter and said unto him, Behold, we have forsaken all and followed thee. What shall we have therefore? And Jesus said unto them, Truly I say unto you, that ye which have followed me in the regeneration, which the Son of Man shall sit in the throne of his glory, ye also shall sit upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. And every one that hath forsaken house, or brethren, sisters, or fathers, or mothers, or wives, or children, or lands, for my name's sake, shall receive 100-fold, and shall inherit everlasting life. But many that are first shall be last, and the last shall be first. That was Matthew chapter 19, verses 13 through 30. Okay, we don't particularly have a subject tonight. Maybe next week we'll focus in on something particularly. But tonight, just a little bit about the Sheriff's Project we've been talking about. We have finally finished the handbook. I haven't sent an email out yet. We had a paragraph I was working on. I just finished off today, and we posted that on the front page. So anybody who wants to read the final version. There's been some changes, a couple of pages added, a few paragraphs changed, a few sentences changed, a few words changed, a few things added. And, of course, a lot of punctuation, corrections, and some grammar corrections and so on. But if anybody reading this final one, and believe me, this book in itself is an education, okay? So anybody reading it, if you find any errors or anything that you think needs correcting, get a hold of Jan. You can find his number up on the directory, or send him an email, jan@nationallibertyalliance.org, and he will talk with me at some point when he collects enough information to make the final changes if there need to be any. But we do have enough now to send it out for a final print quote, and then we'll know exactly what it's going to cost us to get all these handbooks made. And again, we're shooting for 80,000 handbooks. We're planning on sending 20 handbooks to every sheriff in America. So that's quite a few handbooks. We'll have, I don't remember what it was, 15 or 20,000 or something like that left over. Some sheriffs will probably request more because maybe they have more deputies than others, and so on. And we might sell them. Possibly another way to make some money for the project, but we'll see where all that goes. And again, if the money doesn't move in fast enough, then we'll buy a smaller amount, which will cost us more money, unfortunately. But we'll buy that smaller amount and send some out, and then when we get more money, we'll buy a smaller amount and keep doing that until the project is done. That could take 6 months or even a year. But if everybody participates and really connects to take care, to do something about this project, again, just if all of our membership alone were to throw in $10 a piece, if all of our members were to throw in $10 a piece, we'd have plenty of money to do this project. That's quite a bit. It's about $60,000, actually over that, because we have, I think, 6,400 members right now. So we could achieve this quickly. But again, all too often people seem to think, oh, the other guy is going to take care of that. Well, I'm here to tell you the other guy's not taking care of it. Too many people are saying that. We barely collect enough to make it through our monthly overhead. And as a matter of fact, we've been falling behind every month. It had really gotten really drastic, and thankfully someone gave us a pretty large donation, and I mentioned this last week, and it pulled us out of the hole. But we had to pay a lot of the old bills and catch up, and again, we didn't make it enough this month, so again, we had to dig money out of that. So, that money is kind of getting us past, and it'll help us for another couple of months maybe, but we're going to go back into that same old boat if we don't start to collect enough money to maintain the overhead. So please, anybody who's not giving $5 a month or more to National Liberty Alliance, please consider doing so. But going back to the Sheriff's Project, anybody with deep pockets, I know there's some people out there that have some big dollars, and they can afford to throw $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, even more than that, who knows. Maybe we've got someone who's really got a lot of money and can afford to help us with a substantial part of the project, which we're planning is going to be around $70,000, somewhere around there, when all is said and done. And that's why it could take a year to get this project done. We don't have a year. If we got the money quick enough, we can literally get this project done in, if it takes 2 weeks to print, 2 weeks to get it, and 2 weeks to ship, literally we could do it in a month, let's say 2 months. We could do it. If we had the money, enough money, if we got it quick enough, we could do it in 2 months. And what's this going to accomplish? Look at it. If the IRS is a problem, and the sheriffs understand, and people need to read this booklet. Okay, if anybody who hasn't read this sheriff's book, they really need to read the sheriff's book because it becomes quite clear. Like I said, it's an education in itself to begin with, but it's written specifically for sheriffs. So consider who our target is and what they're learning and what they're coming to understand. They cannot deny what we are telling them because we give them everything we give them. We give them backup. We give them proof on where this information comes from, what common law is, and how the Constitution is really controlled by the Bill of Rights. We made it very, very clear, that a warrant cannot be executed unless it has a sworn affidavit with it, a sworn oath. It must have a sworn oath, and it must be signed by a judge, okay? Not a stamp, a signature, a wet ink signature. Okay, so no IRS file paper, warrant, no matter what it is, can pass that. None. So if you have an IRS problem, this will solve all of our IRS problems. I mean, if they want to take us to court and they want to tell us that we owe money, they'll have to take us to a real court, and they're going to have to do it another way because they're not going to be able to do it without a sworn affidavit. And but they can't do it. No one would lose their homes anymore because there is no foreclosure that I have ever heard or seen or am aware of in any way where a sworn affidavit accompanies a warrant to come in and take that home. Impossible. Non-judicial foreclosures, impossible. The sheriff will not permit it. And this booklet teaches these sheriffs those things, okay? And much, much more than that. He's here to protect the people. He's in the courtroom as his deputies. The bailiffs in the courtrooms, any court of law, any real court of law, okay, must be from the sheriff's department. Of course, on the federal level, they have the marshals. Okay, but on all of the state courts and the county courts that are constitutional courts, they must have a deputy in the courtroom. And this book teaches them he's not there to protect the judge. He's there to protect everyone, which includes the judge, of course. He's there to protect the people, and the judge is one of those people. But he's also there to hold the Constitution, to uphold it, to make sure it's adhered to. And we've shown him different ways on how he would deal with this. It makes it crystal clear, this book, to tell the sheriffs exactly how it is hang on a second. Yeah, it makes it crystal clear to these sheriffs. I lost my train of thought. My phone rang there. But a lot of things are made clear in this book. It makes it crystal clear that the sheriff does not have to wait and get a monitor to go talk and permission from some prosecutor to go talk to the grand jury to get his indictment. This book teaches him clearly that he can go right to the court. Literally, if he wanted to, he could pull 25 people off the streets, bring them into the courthouse, say, I need a room over here, take them to jurors room, and get his vote and get the paper signed and come out and make his arrests. So now he'll be able to go after judges. Now he'll be able to go after prosecutors and any other elected official. Because right now, as it stands, they need the permission from a prosecutor to go see a grand jury. And the prosecutor is going to deny. And they do all the time. We've had eight judges we brought up before. Let's say six. All judges from New York City we brought before the sheriff. Concerning a problem, and we were looking for the sheriff to go deal with this problem and make an arrest ultimately. And he couldn't do nothing. He said his hands were tied. Once we convinced him and he agreed that there was a problem there, he said he couldn't do nothing without first convincing the prosecutor on board. Okay? So he understood that. He understood. He knew a law was being broken. He knew he should do something about it. But he couldn't do anything about it because he believes he has to follow the prosecutor. He's got to have his monitor there with him. This book clearly teaches the sheriff he doesn't need that. Okay, he can go straight into a courtroom. He can get the agenda. All he has to do is go to the clerk and say to the clerk, anytime a sitting grand jury is in session, I want my office to be notified of that. So I want to get their schedule so I know when they're in session. And generally, grand juries should be in session in most places, not every county, but most counties, all the time, and they should be constantly, revolving them, maybe working, maybe coming in for a week. If they're in for a month, let's say, it's because there's not that many cases, and maybe they're only coming together once a week, or whatever the case may be. If they're coming together every day, maybe they should be in for a week or so and flip them over. You can't keep people from their jobs and their lives that long. And there's plenty of people out there to bring on to a grand jury. But anyway, he can go and let the clerk know, hey, when the grand jury is in session, I'd like to know. I want my office to be notified. So he always knows. And if he sees a problem, he doesn't have to go arrest the judge and look for if it's a problem with a judge or a prosecutor or some elected individual. He doesn't have to arrest them first and look to see if he can get an indictment. He can go get his indictment first. you know, maybe they're meeting that Monday. I'll go see them that Monday. I'll go in there and I'll make an appointment. I'll get in, forget the appointment. I'm going to get in there and I'm going to squeeze myself in because he's the sheriff. I'm going to see the grand jury. I'm going to tell them what's going on, and I'd like to get an indictment. And they will give it to him, I'm sure. There's no doubt in my mind that you get an indictment. Then he can go make his arrests. Wouldn't that be great if sheriffs understood these things, if sheriff had the backbone to do it, which is really knowledge is what gives them that backbone, and to be able to connect with other sheriffs to deal with problems with federal agencies or even state agencies. You know, look at what they do out there out west, the BLM, and how they intimidate people. And one sheriff is just beat up, you know. But if you've got five or six or eight sheriffs working with them from other counties and they're backing each other up or even coming in from other states, they're not going to get away with that. Just think of what the United States would be like just by getting the sheriffs empowered and understanding their power and their authority. That's how important this particular sheriff's project is. We must educate our sheriffs, and we must do it quickly. Not only that, empowering them and giving them knowledge, they'll eventually come to understand who and what we are doing, and they'll empower us. So again, it's another way for we, the people, to become empowered to finally break into the courts to get these, you know, common law courts back in process and away from these statutory courts, because that's what we're going to, is statutory courts. And so we have to do something about it. The Sheriff's Project can and will do this. So everybody be thinking about this, because we need to support this 100%. Once we open up the other site, and I think it's close, but we're still waiting for the site to be completed. Certain mechanisms have to be put in place, but a lot of it is written. Matter of fact, I think all of it is written. Most of it is already uploaded, but it's you know, it needs to be pulled together. Once that's done, then we're going to be pushing real hard for the project to get funded. And we're going to expect every single member of NLA to go over and sign up as a member, an honorary member. You know, people will come in, they have to identify themselves. If they're a sheriff, they have to be a sheriff. Only the sheriffs will be on the directory. The sheriff's on one site to contact for any problems with the site. But the sheriffs will be the only ones on the directory. If they join and they're a deputy, you know, then they'll be identified as a deputy their profile. So they'll be identified as a deputy. If they're working with the FBI, they'd be identified with the FBI. If they're a police officer, whether a state or a county or a town or whatever, village, you know, they'll be identified as such. Anyone else, active military, will be identified as such. But everyone else will be identified as an honorary member, okay? When you sign up is free for everyone. We're going back and forth on how we're going to deal with this. We definitely want to have the sheriffs coming in for free and all anybody that's in law enforcement or military, we want them to come in for free. And we were thinking of requiring something from all the honorary members, and that money would go to by supporting the website and supporting the project, paying for the books and the mailing and the whole project. And we were thinking maybe $60 a year, which ends up to be $5 a month. And then we thought, well, okay, maybe we'll go $5 a weekly, you know, monthly and so on. And, you know, we came to the final conclusion. At the end of your sign up, you'll be able to come in and you'll have the option. If you can afford to give $5 a month or more, $10, $20, $50, whatever, then you do so. But if you can't afford to pay it, you know, you'll hit the bypass button and you'll still become a member. And you'll have access to everything that members have. You know, be able to leave comments and a few other things. So we want everyone to be able to join. We don't want to restrict or prevent anyone from joining because they don't have the money. But really, I think almost everybody. There are a few exceptions. There's no doubt about that. I know that for a fact. But with those few exceptions, everybody should be able to give $5 a month. Everybody. And many, many more people can give a lot more than that. You figure that out yourself. But again, we don't want to prevent anyone from joining. We need to get the people together, and we need to support this project, and we need to move this project as quick as possible. You know, I beg for money all the time, and I don't have a problem begging for money for what we're doing, you know. But I'm really going to be begging once we get going. I'm going to be asking all the time. I'm going to annoy everybody. We need money. We need to get this project done with. We need to get our sheriffs educated. We need to get out to our liberty groups that we belong to and bring them out to the sheriff's project to plan and make them understand what it is we're doing. Get them to read the book. Get them to understand what power and authority we can give to the sheriffs and how they themselves alone can protect our liberty. These are the guys that really can protect us. They prevent all of these unlawful warrants and seizures of different kinds, and even when they come out with the SWAT team and all that stuff, they better have a warrant, and they better have a signed warrant, and they better have a sworn affidavit on that. And if it's a lie, they better be ready to be held liable for that sworn affidavit lie. Okay? That's protection. This will protect our due process. And when they really get educated, we're giving them a higher education. You know, we're giving them what is fundamental. We're giving the sheriff what is absolutely necessary for him to know in the sheriff's handbook. Then we're giving them the fundamental understanding, even going further than that, giving a little bit of a study on the Constitution, on our courses. It's a free course for anyone who joins. And again, also on our civics course, which will really give them a good understanding of our American history, where common law comes from, and a good understanding of how we got into this mess, how the past 100 years that you know, they'll figure this out on their own. We don't have to tell them there's a conspiracy. We don't have to tell them any of those things. They're going to see the contradiction, and they'll dig, and they'll see, just like you and I have. We come on our own terms and our own time, and so will they. We don't want to push them faster than what they're capable of receiving. But in any event, they'll come to those understandings. But then we give a higher education. Once the website is up, you'll see that, and anyone can take that higher education. And this is where the fundamentals really get involved. You get involved in understanding the fundamentals in a deep way. At that point in time, you know, just bringing them to where we need to bring them, and then going further, you know, is another step. But look, it's enough to protect our due process. It's enough for them to come to an understanding realization. This judge is a problem. He's got to go. I'm going for an indictment on this guy, and go down and see the jury, grand jury, and come back with your indictment in hand. Don't arrest him on the bench. Get him when he's leaving work in the evening or heading to work in the morning or whatever. Just, you know, you shouldn't be arrested on the bench. I always thought that they should be arrested on the bench, but I think, you know, it was brought to my attention that might be a little disrespectful and so on. So everything should be done appropriately. But surely these judges need to go to jail. I can name you a whole list of judges that need to go to jail. Hands down, no questions asked. And they not only, I believe, not only would you get an indictment, I believe we'll get a conviction on every one of these guys and women. And that's what jails are made for, in my opinion, at this point in time. Let's fill them up with the Black Rovers. But again, the sheriffs have got to do this. This is their job. And they can't do it without the law. And right now they don't have the law. We, the people, through this project, can give them that law. So, all right. Also, meanwhile, National Liberty Alliance needs some money. If you can afford $5 a month or more, please, let's get it going. We need to get to that point where we are self-efficient, where we don't have to worry about bills no more. Please, if you can afford $5 a month or more, $10, $20, whatever it is, give to National Liberty Alliance. And probably in the next week, I hope, I don't know, but very, very soon, that project on the sheriffs, we're going to start, and we need money. We need to get this job done. Okay, with that, I don't know, is Jan, are you here? Is Jan here? I don't think I see Jan. Has anyone seen Jan today?
No, I haven't seen Jan today.
Okay. All right. I know he's got some personal problems he's been taking care of. He may be in a little later. All right. Other than that, let's see. Anybody have anything they want to bring up? Robert, do you have anything? Is Ollie here? Does Ollie have anything?
I know Ollie definitely does.
Okay. See if you can find him and unmute. Ollie, get into the Q&A and we'll unmute you.
Oh, I know where he is.
Star 6 into the Q&A. Oh, I see him right now, yeah. Okay. Okay,
hello.
You got it. Go ahead, Ollie. You got the mic.
Yes, I've got an important update. Short story to go with it. In the last 2 years, I have cried and prayed more than I have in the last 75. I was up at Ryan and Ammon Bundy's pretrial release hearing in Portland, okay? In that hearing, I felt a very strong spiritual presence, and I think it was St. Michael himself. The truth was brought out in that hearing. They didn't get released, but I felt a spiritual presence, a strong one. What happened was when I went out and Angie was out there with all her kids. I sat behind Angie's kids during that hearing. They would not let Ryan look at his kids. Now, they're just pure evil, what they're putting them kids through. Okay, I got on the elevator with Angie and all her kids, and I said, okay, I'll be one of the kids. And weave my way back to the back. Little toddler, his youngest, he's a little boy, about 3 or 4. He had looking up at me, looking in my eyes, sizing me up and down. And we walked out of the elevator, and he turned around, and he looked up at me, and he says, I don't know. You're awful old. So talk about instant love and bonds. But when we went out to Portland last spring, I got to talk to Ryan out at Power Rump through the prison monitors for a while. We also went out to Angie's house, and lo and behold, I played ball with him, his older sister, a little bit in the house, just cleaning the house, and I was sort of taking care of them. But we sat down for a sandwich, but lo and behold, I sat down right beside him. I looked over at Angie, and she was over in the kitchen. She had that look, and I, oh no, here we go again. So sure enough, I didn't say nothing. He looks up at me and he says, well, how did you get so old so fast? I lost it. And I said, I don't know. I just woke up one morning. I was just older than the hills. But anyway, last week they had the pretrial release for the 4 guys in Vegas. I asked St. Michael, I said, be in that courtroom and let the truth come out. Okay, first off, they denied Clive and Bundy right off the bat. And the other guy and Ryan were denied. And Ammon was on the stand. And when Ammon gets on the stand, I'll tell you what, he doesn't back down, and it's a lengthy process. So he was put off. They had a closed hearing today, okay? And it was closed all morning. And this afternoon it come out that Ammon was not being released. However, the judge found out that the prosecutor had lied and lied and lied about Ryan. He was released about 2 hours ago. And you talk about prayers being answered. I'm done.
Thank you, Ollie. That was very good news. All right, well, let's all keep our prayers for the Bundys and the others that are going through these trials and tribulations. If any of the people out there are really paying attention from out west and going through these trials, maybe they're new to us and they know what's going on and they know the Bundys, you know, if you guys can get us some affidavits, there is so much here that we could do, but we just don't have those affidavits to be able to do anything. You know, we can't just go, you know, try to get an indictment here without some kind of proof. I mean, we know it's clear, and there's a lot of video out there, but we need some affidavits. So anybody that can get us some affidavits, it'd be appreciated. You know, also, yeah, I'd like to get a project going, and I'm just going to throw this out there real quick, and then we're going to move over to Brent. I'd like to get a project going. Anybody interested in this, get a hold of Jan. You know, Jan may be a little hard to get right now, but leave a message on his machine. Send him an email if you want to get involved. But there are so many things we need to go after the government. You know, I remember we the people went to the federal courts to ask the question, do we still have a Bill of Rights? Do we still have a Constitution? You know, at the time, I was right behind them with them. I didn't have much knowledge back then. It's going back in about 2000 or so. And so I kind of went on along with things, and I've educated myself quite a bit since then. And matter of fact, we the people, you know, really gave me a lot of my education. You know, that's run by Robert Schultz, for those who don't know. But they approached it the wrong way. I'm not going to ask the government anything. I'm going to tell them they ain't got the power. They ain't got the authority. That's what we got to do. We got to be bold. There is so much we can go in. We need to take a case in and go after them for these non-judicial foreclosures. We need to go after the judiciary directly. Okay? Make them answer. Let them show cause by what authority they think they act to make these decisions. Who gave them the authorities to rule against us our right of the Second Amendment, you know, and many others? What is up with this due process? You know, we need to go directly and sue directly. And we can do this, we the people, through the grand jury right here in the case we've got going. We can sue directly also. This doesn't just have to be a criminal thing. Mostly what we're doing is a criminal thing, okay? And we're waiting for prosecutors. And, you know, we're going to be putting some pressure up on the hill real soon. Time is the only thing preventing us from doing it. We need more volunteers, more people involved, so those of us who need the time to write this stuff and get it together can get it together. You know, we need to put them on notice, and they need to answer. And we can do that. But we need a committee. We need a few people to come together and start to pull the evidence together for these things so that we can build our case. You know, we've got a lot of this evidence already, I'm sure, but we need people to come together and kind of, you know, go through it and put it together and gather more evidence and things we need in order to go forward and to go after the judiciary directly in a civil suit. And if they are disobedient to the end results of that, then it becomes a criminal situation. But anyway, anybody who maybe has some paralegal background or good background in the law and has some time that they can help us to dig up things, and you know, we'll have a meeting and try to decide what kind of evidence and where we can get it from and how it needs to be collected and how it needs to be brought together so that we can write a paper using that evidence. Get in touch with Jan and let it be known. And again, Jan will get back to you as soon as he can. You can call him, leave a message. You'll find him under the directory. Or it's Jan, J-A-N, at nationallibertyalliance.org. You can send him an email. I don't think he's in right now, but you can make reference to tonight's meeting at about 9:25 or so, or whatever, 9:30. Okay. We're going to move over. We don't have anyone else that needs to give us any kind of an update, right? Robert, are you here? Do you have anything new to add to what Ali had to say or anything? Maybe Robert's not here tonight. Okay. All right, we're going to go over to Brent. Brent Winters is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. You can visit his website, commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic. Oh, before you get the mic, Gerard, are you here? I saw your name here.
Gerard? I'm here. Yep.
I'm going to let you take over the mic as soon as, as Brent takes over, whatever you have to do, and run the open floor. I'll be here for a while yet myself, but you take control of the board, okay?
Okay, yep.
Brent, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Thanks, John. This is Brent. And my comments may or may not be the opinions of National Liberty Alliance or those that are affiliated with it. They're my comments. My opinion is alone. And the only remedy for lawlessness, and we're seeing it, is law. This whole Bundy situation out in Nevada is representative of the whole problem. It's the one... the problem we're having, the lawlessness and the way that I think it should be characterized, because it all comes down to the families that live in a state that is 69, almost 70% claimed to be owned by the federal government. And the city of Las Vegas has grown exponentially the last couple of decades. It's filled with people from the cities back east now. You go to Las Vegas, and it's filled with people from the rest of the world. It's a shocking almost to go there, and to me it is. You feel like you're on another planet almost. But Las Vegas now, then, is part of the power, then, politically, that controls the rest of the state. And when that happens, then the people that don't live in the city, that are scattered out across the hinterlands a little bit, such as the Bundys, there becomes an animus politically toward them. And this is the way it's been for centuries. It's going on in China right now. And they want to get rid of them, get them off the land. You say, well, why do they want to do that? I don't know that there's really a rational answer to it. Sometimes there is, of course. In this case, we know that it may have had to do with electric power and a senator out there wanting to steal along with his son. A lot of that goes on. But even in China today, I know people that they're from China, and they tell me that they're building cities over there as fast as they can build them. And then they're trying to get the Chinamen and the China women to come and live in the cities because they know they must get them off the land to control them. And if people all live in the cities, and if that happens here in this country, as it is increasingly happening, then the control of the evil empire will be complete. And the evil empire knows that as long as people are scattered out a little bit, they cannot be conquered, they cannot be controlled. The same thing happened in Britain, 1,500 years ago. The Romans came there and they built cities. And they knew they had to get the ancient Britons off of the land and into the cities or they couldn't hold the island. They couldn't control it. And they built the cities. They had beautiful sewer systems and roads. It was really public baths and all the hedonistic things that the effeminate Romans had learned to enjoy, but they couldn't get the Britons to come and live in the cities in that particular instance, and they finally packed up and left. And there were a combination of reasons why they did that, but one of them was they couldn't get their tentacles around the island because the people wouldn't come and pile up with each other. Of course, in the Russian Revolution, that's what happened, 1917, October. As soon as that happened, all of the people that lived out on the land, and Russia has more farmland and land, period, than any country on the face of the planet. One-sixth of the land area of the world is inside of the country of Russia. They have more gold, more oil, more gas, more farmland, more timber, more diamonds, more of pretty near everything, and natural resources than any country on the faces of our green earth. But yet they were starving for over 70 years over there. What was the reason? Well, the law of the city had prevailed, and they moved all the families, all the people into the cities, off the land, and bussed them out onto the land to work every day and try to run the farms. Of course, that didn't work because there was no incentive and nobody cared anymore. The land didn't offer them any personal pride. Well, the same thing's happening to the Bundys as we speak. And it can get pretty vicious, as you can see. It's about as vicious as it can get. There is no feeling there for children, as was revealed to us. And if you don't believe those kind of things, an experience in a federal prosecution will teach you how void there is, how void the prosecutors and federal employees are for children, for all of the bluster and talk about the children. The truth is they hate them. And they want to abuse them. They want to steal them. They don't care how they feel. They don't care. Matter of fact, this whole system is built to bust up families. The prison system. People that suffer when people go to prison. All the fellow that goes suffers. It's unimaginable to understand what it feels like to lose the freedom of bodily movement. You can't go where you want to go. That's devastating. But it's even tougher overall for families. Children never understand what happened to their father. They never accept it when he's innocent. Other people don't accept it either, by the way. And it goes on and on. And there's a viciousness there that a fellow doesn't even want to talk about when he's been in those situations. Well, let's get to the Declaration of 76 and see if we can bring some order to the madness. This is our fundamental law here we're talking about. This is, as it were, a common law complaint. We're in paragraph 15. We started at last time. It says, he, speaking of the emperor of the American colonies, remember, he was king in England, but he was emperor in his empire. He calls himself emperor. It says, he has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving assent to their acts of pretended legislation. And we had mentioned here that it says constitution, but the constitution wouldn't be drafted till over 10 years after this document was written. So we have to ask ourselves, what constitution is he talking about? Well, what he's talking about is the common law of England. That's what he's talking about, because even yet today in England, the Englishman calls his common law our constitution, and the colonists in America called their law, which was their common law, their law of the land, they called it their constitution. And by the way, the common law is still our constitution, and if it isn't, we're not Americans. Of course it is. And our constitution, our written constitution of the United States, is just a brief, incompact draft, to use the words of Supreme Court Justice Taft, incompact draft, a brief of our common law of government. And without our common law, the Constitution is nothing more than a dry and dispirited skeleton of words. It means nothing. It is informed at every point, says our Supreme Court, by our common law. And to not know something about our common law is to not know anything about the Constitution. It's impossible. People talk about things in the Constitution like due process. What does that mean? Can someone define it? Our common law defines it. What about the jury? What does that mean? Is there more to the jury than just impaneling 12 men? Well, you bet there is. And when the Constitution, though, doesn't describe all those things or explain them. And that's why the common law is important. Of course, people at that time could fill in the blanks. They could. They knew how much those words freighted. They were common law phrases and common law words. Well, they talk about a jurisdiction here that our laws, our common law, that's what he's talking about, does not acknowledge, and giving assent to acts of pretended legislation. These acts of pretended legislation, he's speaking specifically here of the Quebec Act, which extended the boundaries of the Canadian province of Quebec clean down to the Ohio River, encompassing, comprising all of Indiana, Ohio, Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin. And the reason that was done was because Parliament then said the common law no longer applied in Quebec, and the canon, civil law, of the Roman Church applied. And our laws, our common law, does not acknowledge the canon law of Rome. And that's the canon law of Rome, is the Code of Justinian applied to the church. I say that on the authority of William Blackstone. He makes much of it. You can read it yourself and see it. It's all the same. And all over the world yet today, the canon law of Rome and the law of the city, the Code of Justinian, and especially in South America, when you get a law degree, you get it in the canon of civil laws. That's the twin sisters of the law of the city, specifically coming out of the law of the city of Rome. Well, King George and his cronies did away with common law freedoms. And the way they did it was by substituting, displacing our common law with a law of foreign jurisdiction. Is that happening to us today? And the answer is yes, of course it is. And the method is the same. It's always the same. It's always subversion with the law of the city. The law of Babylon, the law of Rome in modern times, it's called. It's subversion. What they do is they use several different labels for the same thing. For example, canon law, civil law, admiralty law, martial law, administrative law, all of those are names for the same fundamental thing. People in the patriot movement today talk a lot about admiralty court. You can go to the internet. It's sad to watch, but you can watch these fellows that get in front of the court and try to convince the court they're in there for some petty charge of speeding or fishing without a license or some such a thing. And they try to persuade the court that the court has no jurisdiction over them. And they say, of course, this is an admiralty court. That's what they say. Or this is not a common law court. I demand a common law court, they'll say. And the judge usually will just say, well, I don't know what you're talking about, but here's what we're going to do. And they'll tell them what they're going to do. And then they'll say it again. And the judge will say, well, that I don't understand what you mean when you say that, but what we're going to do is we're going to have another hearing. And if you want to be here, you can be here. If you're not here, we can go ahead and conduct a trial against you, and you're in default, and you'll lose and be sentenced without your presence. But if you want to be here, you can come and be here. And then, of course, the fellow will assert the idea. He'll say, well, you understand, Judge, I'm saying this is a admiralty court, and on he goes. And I'm telling you for a fact, those judges don't have a clue what he's talking about. Now, that may be that it's that they're practicing in those courts, that which I see on YouTube. Probably they're practicing principles of the law of the city. And they're using all sorts of words to do that. And we've gotten ourselves so deep in the soup and the sewage of the law of the city that the lawyers and the judges that practice, and the lawyers that practice in the courts and the judges on the bench, they don't have a clue what they're in. They go to law school, they learn, they take the courses, they get the degree, then they set for the bar exam, and they take the preparatory course, they take the bar exam, they take the bar exam, and they say, okay, now I can make a living. And then they start learning little things they can do here and there to make a little bit of money, and they keep doing it. The more they make money, the more they want to try some more and make money. And if it works, they just keep doing it. And I'm telling you, they don't have, know anything about these things these fellas are talking about, admiralty law and all that, and don't care. All they know is, if I stay here long enough on the bench, I'll get a retirement here before very long, and you guys can have it. I don't care anymore. That's their attitude. That's the attitude of a lot of sheriffs I've talked to. That's the attitude of judges, the attitude of lawyers. They're like most other people. They want to have security and have a home and a place to live, and they've tried to figure out a way to do that. It doesn't mean that they're doing right. There are a lot of people in this world, the people that arrested the Bundys and that are holding them, the jailers that are holding them, are doing so without law behind them. But what they want is a paycheck, security, and take care of their families. And if you challenge them on that point, they'll get really angry about it. But they don't understand what they're doing in most cases. There may be a few, I don't know. Some of them are racked with so much guilt. That's why they get so angry when you challenge them about it. Because they're tied in, they're dependent. They're glorified welfare recipients. And they're willing to do things that aren't lawful just to be able to pay the rent and take care of their wives and their children. Is that a good excuse for doing the wrong thing? I'll let you be the judge of it. But that's what's going on in America. It's always going on. It's just that it's getting to a pitched level at this point. And I went through a little town the other day that I used to know about when I was growing up, and somebody told me there were 10 cops in that town. And I thought to myself, shucks, when I was a teenager, everybody knew there was only 1.5 cop in that town. And we all knew where they were at any given point and knew what we could get away with because we knew where they were, like boys do, whether it was firecrackers, watermelons, or busting watermelons in the middle of the four-way stop at Halloween. Or we all knew where they were. Well, now there are 10. And I know they don't need 10 police officers in that town. They didn't need 10 back then. The town hasn't grown. Matter of fact, it's lost a little population since then. But when you hear about things like that, what it is, of course, it's become a job program for people that want to have a living and feel like they're told they're contributing to their community, when the truth is they're the problem. Well, that's what happened back then, and that's what's happening now under different labels. The law of the city is pressing in upon us. Islam is fundamentally the law of the city. It's pressing in upon us. And there's an orchestrated conspiracy. And don't let people make fun of you about using the word conspiracy. Conspiracy is used every day in the courts. It's a crime. Conspiracy has two elements. It's an agreement to commit a crime. Agreement, number one, you have an agreement, whether it's tacit or written or oral or just understood. And number two, to commit a crime. Then, of course, you have to prove one affirmative step in the furtherance of that conspiracy. Now, nobody in their right mind, if they stop and think about it, will say that there's not a conspiracy in our country to do evil. Every agreement, every acting in concert of men to do evil is a conspiracy. The jailers, the police officers, the bailiffs, all the people that participate in the unlawful prosecution of the Bundys are part of a conspiracy. You say, well, they didn't sit down and agree about anything. No, they don't have to. That's not what conspiracy is. Conspiracy is just tacit agreement. Hey, I do my thing, you do your thing, and the Bundy just keep going through the machinery. The machinery of the trials, the courts, and we'll give them a fair trial and send them to jail. Either you're a part of the problem or you're a part of the solution. And standing in the courtroom, acting like you're doing your duty or following your oath or whatever you think you're doing is not being patriotic. It's being lawless. We must think a little more contemplatively about these things. As does the Federal Reserve Bank in our day, England's central bank of that day of the colonials in America enjoyed monopolies on issuing currency, on trade, using the East India Company, and on receipt of tax revenues to service its loans to the country of England, and further to fund enforcement of such taxation. All this is contrary to the English Constitution's common law rights against such monopolies. That's what our forebears complained of against the country of England. But this clause of our Declaration of 76, as I've mentioned, shows not only that the colonists had a good constitution in their common law government, but also their zeal was keen to keep that common law from strange law pollutants, as it says up here, a jurisdiction formed our constitution. The canon and civil laws, the admiralty laws, they're all the same fundamental thing. They have the same fundamental principles behind them. Bureaucratic law, admiralty law, we face that today in America. We are, by everyone who's done a study on the subject, the most regulated, legislated country on the face of our planet. And we're a common law country. How can that be? Well, what we have here, and it's not good we have all that legislation and regulation, but what we have here still is our common law, and our common law always looks backward before it looks forward. So it's constantly, our courts are constantly laying court opinions on top of that legislation. By independent judgment, separation of powers from the legislative branch, the courts do what they want. And they follow each other's rulings in the courts of higher jurisdiction. All courts in the United States are bound by our common law tradition to follow not the statute in every case precisely, but to follow the court's application of the statute in individual instances. That's the doctrine of separation of powers, which is the doctrine, of course, the same thing called independence of the judiciary. And out of independence of the judiciary is also the independence of the jury and the grand jury. You say, well, the grand jury is not part of the judiciary. I understand. But still, it's the same principle of independent judgment. The courts of our country are not bound to obey any legislation. If they believe it's unlawful, it's their duty to say so. And the juries of our country are not bound to obey any court or any legislator if they don't want to. And they have a duty to say yes to the government or to say no. It's their duty. And if they aren't doing it independently, of independent mind, being their own man, in every case, and every juror must be his own man. Then they're not doing their duty. They're not patriotic in that respect. Patriotism demands independent judgment. God demands it, and so also does our common law for that reason. As Andy Jackson said when he vetoed the Second Bank of the United States, see, that's independent judgment. He could stop legislation. And he was criticized for it hard. And he said, when I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, I did not take that oath to support and defend the Constitution as some other man understands it. I took that oath to support and defend it as I understand it. In other words, in my independent judgment and good faith. And if we all do that, there's one thing I know for sure. We won't all agree. That's why I say at the beginnings of these presentations, my opinions are my own. I don't expect anybody else in NLA to agree with all that I say, or I can't even hope that everybody would agree with anything I would say. And if they did, there was something wrong with them. But on the other hand, I may not be the smartest man in the world, but I'm not the dumbest one either, and I know you aren't either. And you must make independent judgment. When you stand before the judge of all the world, as this document, our Declaration of 76, says, when you finally stand before him, you're not going to be able to give the excuse, well, the president said it was okay, or the Supreme Court said it was okay, or my commanding officer said it was okay, or my wife said it was okay, or we all took a vote, and my children said it was okay, or the Pope said it was okay, or my preacher said it was okay. God will not allow that. And that's fundamental also to our common law government. Every person is responsible to do what he knows in his conscience to be right. And only God is Lord of the individual conscience. Well, Gerard, I think you're still there, aren't you? That's enough for me tonight. Appreciate it. Or John.
I'm here too. Gerard, are you here? Let me reorganize my desktop here. Hang on a second. I don't know if Gerard's still here or not, but okay. Well, I'll run things till Gerard gets back. Maybe you're muted and you don't realize it.
I'm here.
Hey, by the way, Brent.
Yeah, they had my mute on.
Hey, I'll pass it back in a second. Brent, oh, I got something I want to ask you for if I can. You know, that was very interesting what you said about Jackson. And I don't know if you're aware of anybody else, any other president or someone in high power that made such a statement as that, you know, that he is going to enforce and into the way he interprets it, the Constitution. Maybe if you can get me that documentation, that documented somewhere, and anything else you can think of that idea is documented, because I think we need to get that to this president. Now, I know for sure, you know, he may not want to push too hard, and he may know more than he's letting on, and he may be letting things take a certain course until he does anything. So all of that is possible. But nevertheless, it is very strong likelihood he doesn't understand that. You know, when those judges came out and started to alter his enforcement of the law, he should have shut them judges right down. And let them know they're in bad behavior, and there's a lot of things he could have done. But he could have pressed forward and enforced that law, because he's ultimately the top law enforcer, in a sense, ultimately the Constitution here. He's got a lot of power. So anything you can get together for me that we can show documentation to these sheriffs, I think we need to add that in there. Not to the sheriffs, I mean to the president, but also to the sheriffs too. I'd like to get that into the book.
You're right, John. And every sheriff has the same responsibility in his county that the president of the United States has to make independent judgment. Yeah, I agree. That's a good point.
So see, whatever you could dig, I'd appreciate that. You know, I did see something, and I don't think I got this into the book. There was something where, you know, a sheriff has never been – there's only one or two sheriffs in the entire history of the United States has been impeached. I think it was one, but it might have been two. And both of them were for really good cause. I mean, you know – really, they were criminals themselves, and it was criminal actions. But other than that, other than that,
I know. I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt. No, you finish your thought.
Well, other than that, I'm not aware, and I'm pretty sure, you know, because I was looking this up on Googling, this kind of an idea, and there is nothing out there. As a matter of fact, the statement has been made that the impeachments of sheriffs have only been a couple of times. I think that was through Wikipedia, as a matter of fact. And I'll have to double-check that and get that into the sheriff's handbooks, because when the sheriff stands up and gets the guts, the backbone, which takes knowledge, to step up and say, this is the way it's going to be because this is the way I understand it, and goes forward, he can't be held liable, responsible, or anything. He could be corrected, maybe. And you know what? Guess what? The court of law will correct his problem, and he'll be corrected. It's not that he acted with bad ill intent. He acted in good faith of what he understands and knows. But we have to give these sheriffs the power. We have to give our president a little more power in this area. But go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I know plenty of sheriffs that have been removed from office because they were criminals and ended up going to prison for a long time, some of them. But
yeah, I'm talking about through impeachment.
Yeah, you're talking about impeachment. That's a different matter. And that's the other. We got a lot of remedies. We're not using them. It's a remedy to impeach anybody. Yeah, under state government, there's usually rules of impeachment, and then federal rules. Judges used to be impeached pretty routinely. I wouldn't say just every day, but when it needed to happen, it happened. But we don't have legislators that are running on that idea. I think it'd be nice to see a congressman run and say, you know, I'm going to try to impeach some of these federal judges. Mm-hmm. Now, I asked, and it all comes down to separation of powers, which means independence of the judiciary from the executive, independence of the executive from the other two branches, and on we go. A man that's in the news now, Judge Roy Moore, I interviewed him about seven years ago on the radio. And it was about an hour.
He just ran for office, didn't he?
He's running for U.S. Senate down in Alabama.
Yeah.
And the things I'm about to say are not because I wouldn't support him being senator, but he shoved himself into the public eye, and so he's somebody we can talk about. And I don't know why he gave me this answer, whether he felt threatened or he thought I was trying to trap him or maybe he really believed it. But I asked him. At that time, they were really being hard on him. They had impeached him, threw him out of office. He was Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. And I asked him, not because I wanted the answer. I knew what I thought about it, and I figured he thought the same thing I did. But I wanted the audience to hear him say it. I said, Judge Moore, of the three branches of government, which one, if any, trumps the other one? Do the rulings of the Supreme Court trump the Congress and the President, or do what the President trump the... And on we went. And he got kind of miffed at me and ticked, and he said, you know the answer to that question. I said, well, I know what I think, Judge Moore, but I'm not asking this because I'm trying to trap you. I just want the audience to hear from you what you think about it. And he, at that time, he was very much in the public eye, too. And he said the Supreme Court takes precedence. Well, I don't know why he said that. I learned when I was in the eighth grade, amazingly, when I graduated from high school and all eighth grade, we had to take a Constitution test. And I learned more getting ready for that Constitution test than I ever learned in law school about the Constitution. I'm not exaggerating when I say that. I'm not trying to be funny. That's the truth. But I learned a whole lot of things. But the one thing I remember learning for the test was that the branches of government, the three branches of government that grow out of the common trunk called the Constitution, are co-equal branches. Co-equal. That means every person in every one of those branches is responsible that he do right according to what he understands right to be in the application of the law. And when you take an oath, you have to take the oath as you understand it. You can't say, I'm taking this oath as so-and-so understands it. Or I'm taking an oath to the Constitution as the Supreme Court, as Justice Blackmun understands it. Well, that's silly. It's absurd. So why would we even think that we had to say these kind of things? Like Andrew Jackson said, I did not take the oath to support it as another man understands it. Well, but Judge Moore said that, and I have to believe, and I still kind of believe, that Judge Moore said it for not because he believed it, but because maybe he thought I was trying to trap him, but I don't know for sure. But if I were interviewing him again, I don't know if I'd ask the question again. I just know there's a lot of confusion about that. And ever since the year 1910, when a Quaker, who was a communist, by the way, his name was Charles Beard. He's a professor, I believe, at Wabash College, among other places in Indiana. But he became very famous. He wrote a book called, I forget the name. I just know what it was about and read it two or three times. It's a little paperback. You can still get it. But what he tried to establish in that book was that the Supreme Court of the United States takes precedent when it makes its decisions over everything, any legislation in Congress and anything the president tries to do. And that the Supreme Court of the United States has quoted that book in its opinions, and it has given us the fantasy. It's a false fantasy. It's not true. Or not a false fantasy. It's just falsity. The Supreme Court of the United States does not trump the other two branches. There's nothing in our Constitution the United States would even give a hint of that. You won't find in our Constitution, go back and read it. See if you can find something in there that says the Supreme Court takes precedent, its decisions, over what the president does and what the Congress says, or the Congress takes precedent over what the Supreme Court wants. That's not true. They're co-equal. And they're I like to describe it this way, the three branches of government, in a common law government, and it's common law doctrine. It was there before we had our Constitution. The executive power of England and the Parliament and the courts have been that way for centuries. But it's a perpetual Mexican standoff. If you recall that movie, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, one of those spaghetti westerns with Clint Eastwood at the very end, is that gun battle, three-way gun battle, a Mexican standoff, they called it. And that's what our government is, and that's the way we want it, and that's what James Madison said made it gives us freedom, because they're concentrating, the government's concentrating constantly on trying to overcome each other, none of them having the lawful right to do it, and they, as long as they're fighting each other, they leave us alone. That was what he said, pretty much. I'm summing it up. That's because each of them are of independent mind, and they do what they believe is right. We're counting on them trying to do what they think is right, but just in case one of them doesn't, we've got two other branches that will step in and say, now, wait a minute, that's not right. You're not coming over here, and I'm not doing what you say. The president of the United States, every president, chooses what legislation of Congress he will enforce. Every one of them. I remember back in the 90s, Bill Clinton did not enforce Congress's act that said that there had to be posted in every unionized workplace a poster that tells union workers that they don't have to give their union dues to the union. They can direct their union dues to go to some other charity approved. The legislation said, Congress said, the president signed it. Bill Clinton never enforced it, never did. And there are hundreds of other pieces of legislation he chose not to enforce. Well, that's true of the Republican presidents, too. But there is something that restrains them in that, and that is political expediency. If politically they don't think they can get away with not supporting a piece of legislation, they won't do it. If it's high visibility or something. And so there is that political element that helps too. And we, as the body of Americans, our opinion, the spirit, the groundswell that we give in our country dictates a lot of what presidents and congressmen and court people will do. Well, back to you, John. I've talked enough. I've probably talked too much.
Okay. Thank you, Brent. All right, but anyway, when you get a chance, if you can find out where we get those things documented, anything we can add in there for the sheriff and give to the president, we need to do it. And we do intend on communicating with the president again very soon. And just to make a few other notes, Jeff Sessions, again, seems to continue sitting on his hands here. And I know the president had some harsh words, and not only for him, but the entire justice system. It's time for us to do something with Jeff Sessions. He is just ignoring what needs to be done. It's time to do something with these two judges up here in the Northern District, which we do have a plan, and we're going to move through that maybe in the next week or two. It's kind of hard to give a timing on these are very important issues. These are very important things we need to do, but we also have a stack of other things that need to get completed, and and you kind of try to get a schedule going, and it's just almost impossible, but we're doing the best we can to move on all these things. And I really do hope we can move on this sheriff program really, really quick and hard. We need to run with this thing quickly. And anybody who can afford, once we open up, to give $100 or $1,000 right up front, hey, you know, whatever anybody is capable of doing, it's going to be really appreciated by everyone, especially the people being, beat up by the IRS and these mortgage companies and these tax foreclosures. Just picture the fact, if we get our message to these sheriffs and the sheriffs become educated and start to exercise the law the way they should be, no more. People will not lose their homes to tax foreclosures ever again. People will not lose their homes to, non-judicial foreclosures. They won't even be able to foreclose, because that's an impossibility. They cannot. They don't have a contract. Nobody holds a contract, and they can't even find the paperwork that they think might be a contract, but it's not a contract anyway. The IRS will never bother anyone again. Just think about those things. If the sheriffs understood their power and authority and could get the backbone, which is knowledge, we'll give them that backbone, to step up and do something. And we wouldn't be dealing with this problem out there out west with what's going on with the Bundys right now, what went up in Oregon. People would be in jail already. Matter of fact, these judges would have been arrested already. And we could do something with that ourselves if we can get some people out there to give us the documentation we need in order to pursue an indictment, which I believe we can get an indictment. And one other thing, there is another way that you can impeach a judge or any elected official, and that's called an indictment, by a different name, of course. It's an indictment. And any sheriff can get rid of any judge or any elected official himself by seeking an indictment. That's all it takes. The power of the people is so powerful, and yet we don't pick it up and run with it. The power of the political power, of the committeeman process, which we want to recapture back through the committees of safety. The power of the grand jury, okay? We, the people, have that power to indict anyone. We can indict the President of the United States. We'd have to have some good proof but on any of these people, but we can do it, okay? And we can, and of course, you know, by empowering the sheriffs, we empower ourselves because we're now protected. We can get on the phone and call a sheriff when we have a problem with a code enforcement officer or someone of that type. I know you've heard the story. We've brought this up a couple of times where there was something going on up in, it was up north here for me. I forget where exactly it was. I wasn't there. But there were some liberty groups. Como was on one side of the lake having some kind of an event going on, and liberty groups got onto the other side of the lake, and they had signs, and they were protesting. And the cops came to shut them down, and someone called the sheriff, and the sheriff came and knocked down all of the Do Not Cross signs and kicked the cops out of the park. Because the sheriff understood that he had the power and these people had the right to do what they were doing. That's the kind of sheriff we need. If you want that kind of sheriff, we need to get this book out into the hands of the sheriff. We need to educate our sheriffs. And don't think that the other guy is going to give enough for it. Everybody needs to, even if it's only $5, everybody needs to give. Everybody needs to participate. And we need to all go out and get more people in liberty groups to get to this website once we launch it. And also get partners in this. And get people into the committees of safety. By getting people out to that website, we'll also get people into the committees of safety. And by getting the sheriffs going and looking for committees of safety in their county, we'll make the connections with lots of people across this nation. We've got connections in every state of the union and a lot of the counties. I don't know what percentage. One day I'm going to go look to see if we can figure out what percentage of the counties we actually have a presence in. But we all have a presence in a lot of counties. There's 3,140 or 34 counties in America, and I'm willing to bet we've got a presence in more than 2,000, maybe 2,400. I don't really know. We got a lot of members. And we're in every state, and we can get this moving. We can connect the people with the sheriffs. When the sheriffs are looking for the people, now you really got something going, because they're already getting educated. They're understanding, and they're going to realize at that point they need to be working with the people. And I think one other thing we're going to add into the sheriff's book, again, I think is another maybe a couple paragraphs, a little more powerful on, maybe we'll save that for the website. We're going to make a big thing on the power of the people and the authority of the people through the right of a grand jury and, of course, an untainted trial jury. And but look it, only the people can save America. Will you? Gerard, you got it.
Yes. And I also hear that, you know, the president is hoping that the American people will step up to the plate and give him and provide for him the evidence that he needs to put these people away. I mean, every affidavit, everything, you know, they love the papers we're filing in the court because he's going to dig all of those up. You watch and see what he's going to do. He wants us to document what they're doing. He wants us to catalog everything, every film and all that, and put it in such a way that they can grab it and use it. Look at it, it's massive. We already started, you know. I mean, just some of the issues that we worked on with Gary Null, with the vaccinations and all this other crazy crap that they're doing, that's such a massive part of the work that they've already done that we can even help them with by putting it down and documenting it and sending it into the courts. And, you know, that's one of the reasons they don't want to file our paperwork, because they don't want a record of this. And that's why I believe affidavits are so powerful, you know, because it's the basis of law. They know that. They understand that. And I'll tell you, as far as Donald Trump goes, you know, I don't know if he knew whether or not the Supreme Court was not superior over him. I think he was too busy playing chess with them, where he didn't want to push that because he wanted to keep them busy. Because all he did was turn around and modify the order and left that thing in court, let them fight over it. Well, meanwhile, he just made another order, a little different, worded it differently, and it went through, which tells me that he had a plan all along. And every time you think he doesn't know what he's doing, they say he's stupid. And then you find out that he had a plan. So I stopped trying to second guess him, because sometimes it takes two or three steps of his to really see what he's doing. So I'm hopeful that, like John says, you know, about the judges, you know, the down there they're playing checkers, up here we're playing chess. And I think that's what's going on. I think he's pretty intelligent. So I'm hoping that, you know, I mean, maybe, you know, look, sometimes your pride and ego gets a hold of you and you want to do these things. You know, I think he likes to play a little bit. You know, I don't know if you ever watch a boxing match, like Muhammad Ali used to taunt the guy, you know what I mean? And I think Donald Trump's doing some of that. And that can, sometimes you can get in trouble doing that, but I think he likes a good fight, and that's part of his strategy. Anyway, we're going to move into question and answer. I have Crystal here, and I'm going to open her up here. Crystal. No, it says Greta went in. I don't know how that happened. Go ahead, Greta.
That's really good. You can watch it.
Hello, can you hear me? Am I online? Did I lose?
Yeah, you're anybody? There. You're there. Greta's been unmuted. Greta from Michigan, it looks like, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's like really silent. I don't hear anything.
Greta, go right ahead, Greta. You got the mic. Maybe you got a mute on the other side. I don't know, but you got the mic.
Wait, you're right. Unmute yourself, Greta.
Can you turn it down, dude? You don't need it that loud.
Greta, you got the mic. Okay, going once for Greta, going twice. We're going to move to the next person.
Yeah, okay. Just get back in, Greta, if you... Okay, the next guy is, it looks like,
just
Will.
Just careful, don't hit end session now.
No, I'm hitting next. How can you... That's 17 feet to the right.
Yeah, well, for you, that's not too far.
Yeah, okay.
Crystal, go right ahead.
It's not coming up in the order that it says. It's jumping all over the place. Because I said mine was Will was supposed to be up next. And now it says Crystal, and she's not responding. Hello, Crystal.
Crystal from Connecticut. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hello.
There she is.
Hi.
Hey. Go on.
I got the papers. Thank you, John. And also, with this court and stuff like that, what they've been doing up here, we found out there's over 30,000 attorneys in the state of Connecticut, which is a small state. And that's like 177 attorneys per town and city out of the 169. We found out that they are doing like illegal foreclosures and evictions for tenants. And what they're doing, it's the attorneys and the marshals. And five people we ran into already, and there's another one coming up this week. The marshal went and gave him an eviction that he has to be up by the 16th. And so the person was quite upset because he's disabled. I said, well, what is your court date? He goes, I don't have a court date. I said, well, they can't evict you without a court date. And so the people in the past that had their stuff evicted, when they went to claim their stuff, wherever they were supposed to storage, there was no records and there was no docket number. So this is what's going on here. And what else is there? And then, like, I was supposed to...
Well, one of the major problems out there in Connecticut is the fact that they don't have any sheriffs. I mean, not that that would necessarily help them too much, because sheriffs are doing this all over the land. But let me ask you a question before you get too deep into this. When these people are being evicted, is the marshal coming in exercising a foreclosure eviction, or is he exercising...
Yes.
I haven't seen a sheriff do that yet. And that tells us something. Look at how bold they are in Connecticut to move directly into that, because there's no sheriff there. And this year is sort of an experiment for them. They're experimenting, I perceive, in Connecticut, maybe some other places, and they're going to say, oh, we're going to move this the other way. See, they want to do it even more and more bold to get the sheriff to do the unconstitutional thing. And they got it going with the quote-unquote marshals out there in Connecticut. And look, we really need to do something for Connecticut. If we can get a small committee, a serious committee, we talked a little while ago about this, a serious group of people who can do some investigation, pull things together, we can give them some instructions, get the right evidence. We can add in this going after Connecticut for taking away our sheriffs from there. But we've got five counties in New York. We need to deal with that. And there are a couple other states. Now Alaska has never had a sheriff. Now, they need to have sheriffs up there. So we need to deal with Alaska, too. I'm trying to think if Maryland has gotten to that point. I know they were moving, if I recall, getting rid of sheriffs. I don't know if they've actually got that done or not. But anyway, very interesting that they're going right out and throwing these people out under the foreclosures.
And the ironic one, as a matter of fact, this person still has, because the first time I was aware of it was about a year ago. As a matter of fact, it was the week of Thanksgiving. And they sent her the letter for the foreclosure, and it was supposed to be on Thanksgiving Day. So when she read the day, I said, well, that's on a Thursday. That's Thanksgiving. I said, something's not right with that paper, right? So then I guess she called and said, well, how am I going to be evicted on Thanksgiving? She goes, the courts are closed. Okay, now that was on a Friday. Do you know that Saturday they sent her the paper? I said, that's not right because the courts are closed. So how could they sit there and correct the date when the courts are closed? I said, I would call, you know, I didn't really even know who to call at that point. But I said, you go to the court that Monday morning. That Monday they came and they had the police and they drilled up the door and, yeah. And I said, this is illegal. That, you know, that, because you can't do anything unless you have to go to court. And I said, you don't even have a docket number. Although when she did go to court, they were lying down at the court too. But I said, you got them because here's the paperwork. And it was on a Saturday that it was changed. And didn't even have the time when they changed it. I think it was like 11:06 or something like that a.m. So, I mean, it's like everybody just got to be on their P's and Q's when it comes to these illegal foreclosures.
Well, look at, they you know, the proof is in the pudding, okay? Look at the way they do things. They know that they have to play the game of changing the name over. They have to take a period of time. That's why it takes so long to get people evicted out of this process, at least here in New York and many other states. You know, people could live in their houses 2, 3, 4, 5, and sometimes even more years than that before they actually get to the point where the home is actually taken away. And but they have to go through this this process. And then they have to wait a while, make sure, you know, no one is watching and that, hey, you know, no one says nothing so far, so let's take the next step. And then they take the next step and the next step. Before you know it, your house is no longer in your name. Property's not in your name. And then how do they do the eviction? They actually go to a tenant thing. These people haven't paid their rent, so to speak. And that's how they get the sheriff to come out, because, you see, as far as the sheriff's exercising what the court is saying, he's got to perceive that they're doing the right thing. But to be honest, well, the sheriffs wouldn't even know, even if they did it the other way around. They don't even know.
Well, we do have some sheriffs here. As a matter of fact, one of the sheriffs, he got arrested. He made the news and all that because he was the one robbing and stealing people's property and everything else. And all the debt collectors, it's the attorneys. So, I mean, they're just taking up the blocks of homes. Connecticut is going to be the new Hollywood because with all the worldwide disaster, I see what's going to happen here. The next reevaluation that comes up, the taxes are going to be about a good $30,000-$40,000, and the only one who will be able to afford it will be the attorneys. They're taking up everyone's property. As a matter of fact, they told me that when they foreclosed
on my property.
Well,
that also is part of the conspiracy, because all of these things are the same. I hear the stories constantly. It's the same story. And every time you hear about it, people will go even to their own foreclosure sales, and no one will show up. And some will hang around, and then they come out an hour or two later, and then they make the sale. They're buying it themselves.
Exactly.
It's a wink, a handshake, and a nod, you know. And,
yeah, but this is what. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the point is that is proof of the conspiracy. When you can show that all these homes are being monetized and brought into a package and are monetizing it and selling it off. I mean, it's just amazing, amazing.
But my house has been paid for, and so they gave me a bill. I said, "Can I have the amount?" What you say? Oh. So they gave me a bill, and then I wrote back on the side on the slant, except for value, and I send that back to them. And I'm also filing that UCTK sent to U.S. Treasury Department. But everything I've been filing with my property, you know what I've been doing? I've been taking it to the town clerks, recording it, and I'm getting a volume of page on all the papers. I did receive the paperwork from you, and I said, I'm going to go record that on my deed also. You know, I did
One of the other things we want to do now is the show causes to the judges. We need more people helping. So please, if someone's got some time, especially people who are good at organizing, people who are managers, got manager skills, writing skills, investigating skills, paralegal skills, we need people with these skills to assist us and work with us to create all the things we need to create and do.
I want to see what
I'd love to be able to take all of these foreclosures that we have sent the information to. We've notified the judge. We've notified also the, depending on what it was, if it's a tax foreclosure, the county, or if it's a mortgage, the mortgage company. We've notified them, and they went forward anyway. And I'd like to get a little more information on all of these foreclosures that have taken place and people have lost their homes, and get the name of any other party involved, but particularly the judge, and particularly the again, either the county as the tax or the mortgage company. And we need to do a show cause where our foreclose ends up with the fact of restoration. They need to, at minimum, restore the individual. As far as damages are concerned and things of that nature, you know, once that, if we can get it to that point, then the people will be responsible to take it into the court to get damages further. But they should at least, bare minimum, be restored to their original state of being before they came and were terrorized by these people. And of course, you know, people need also to get restored as far as their injury is concerned, which is too much for us to get directly involved with. But that's a civil case. And
yes.
And if necessary, if you have a win like this, you could actually even hire a lawyer to do that. But I'll tell you, anybody who hires a lawyer to do this for them...
The lawyers, you know, that are doing it, though.
Right, well, that's true. That's true. But, you know, you could probably get a lawyer to help you win the case on these individual things. If you win back and you get your house back, now your damages, you probably get a lawyer to help you with that. You might be right, may not. But if you do, you know, look at... Mm-hmm. I personally... You know,
I'm still in my house.
It's a slam dunk thing, though. But for those who aren't in the house, this is a slam dunk case for those people on the civil side. In my opinion, it's slam dunk. You can get it done on your own. If you educate, you'd be educating yourself now. Anybody who's lost a home or is losing a home, you better educate yourself now so you can deal with it yourself. But if you did have to get a lawyer, and you can get a lawyer that'll do this for you, the second part of this for the damages. You know, I wouldn't give a lawyer any more than 25%. I know that they go 33% is common, you know. But lawyers will take 25%, especially on a slam-dunk case. And if they don't, another lawyer.
I told you what happened in my case when I went to court, which they sat there and overthrew my case. They gave the jurist my medical records, which wasn't my medical records. I got a sworn affidavit pertaining to that. And also, another big scam what they're doing here is that WPCA, that's the sewer bill. And they equate the assessment of that bill to your water bill. And I said, like, for example, if you're paying, like, if you use 4 units a month, there's 748 gallons of water per unit. So that's... The 4 units, so that's 4.25, so it's approximately $16, $17. Then they double that bill for this person who owns the water company. And says, what do you mean owns the water company? God gives us the water free. So everything is like on the light bill, you're paying 2 generation bill for your services and for the private. So it's all corporate. Okay. Then they turn around and charge you a WPCA bill for the exact amount. Well, first of all, unless you own a laundromat, your water bill, your sewer bill wouldn't be that amount because the majority of the people are at home all day long and you're not running water. And see, on the bill, I said, oh, there has a WPCI, which means the WPCA, and that's only like maybe 30 cents if it was legitimate, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But they bring it all the way up to the total amount what you're paying on the water bill. And I said, this is so easy to, you know, so I said, you know what, I'm trying to get a few people together so we can do a class action. I don't want to, you know, but I want to teach, this is what I've been trying to teach to people so you can know what's going on, you know. And I keep on referring them with the National Liberty Alliance, the parents and all, and we want
to send you got to be very careful with a class action suit because the only person that really makes money on that
is the attorney.
That's right. Nobody else really makes anything worthwhile.
That's why I want to go by myself. As I said, if we could sit there,
Look, I'll tell you what. Look, it's simple, and this should be our message, and we should really be pushing this, you know, and people need to hear it and know it. And if they heard it once and 3 months later or a year later they run into a problem, they didn't take care of their business, then they're really, really shooting themselves in the foot. Bottom line is we need to know how to do this ourselves. These are simple things. These things are real simple. But again, you have to know you have to understand how the court works. You have to understand the process. You have to understand the paperwork and how they play. You know, you read the rules and understand the rules. And that may sound overwhelming. And at first, when I started getting in this, I said, okay, this is going to get involved and it's going to take me a long time, but I'm going to do it. And I found myself through this stuff a lot quicker than I ever thought of. And I want to tell you something. This is not difficult stuff. It's just kind of like learning a new language, but it's even easier than learning a new language. You know, mm-hmm. you have to get the terminology. And it's all a matter of when you're doing your studying. Look, we have put together the courses. Anybody wants to learn to do this, it's very simple. Look, read all our paperwork. That in itself is an education. Read the sheriff's handbook. That is an education. Read the juris handbook. That is an education. Now, take our two courses, our civics course, our constitutional course. There is your education. And then take the jurisdictionary course. And I would say take the jurisdictionary course last. Well, it's not necessarily true. I don't know. People will have to figure out what they want to do. I don't think it's all that important to put one before the other. I would say take a constitutional course absolutely the first thing, because that constitutional course is a very short course. You could do it in 6 hours on a Saturday, you know. The civics course is 120 hours, mostly video. It's all video and audio. You watch a video, listen to audio, and then you ask a few questions. And the questions are only there to make sure you watch the video. They're very simple questions. The answers are very simple. And then once you get, you know, that will take some time. You could be doing the jurisdictionary course while you're doing that. Now, the jurisdictionary course is the course that's going to lay out how to do the paperwork, how to file the papers, what are all the papers required, and all the steps, you know, that you have to do in order to file a case. And it talks to you about the wherefore clause. And now, there's some stuff in there that is problematic, okay, that I would suggest not to do. And therein is where maybe taking a civics course after that might be helpful. But either way, it should be helpful, because we make a lot of the corrections in our civics course, you know, through the common law process, common law courts, what you learn there, and how to deal with the courts from the common law perspective. Now, you know, there's quite a bit to be learned there, but even there's some errors, you know. Like with Bill Thornton, he's got a couple of major errors. And once you correct them, it's very simple, you know, you correct them globally in your mind, so to speak. One of the things that he teaches that's an error is that you're the king of the court. You are not the king of the court. You may be the sovereign of the court, but you're not the king of the court. God is the king of that court. And that is a huge, huge difference. We have to think on those terms, because now we're dealing with natural law, common law. It makes it clear. Man can't fudge around with that, that God has already laid down the law. Now, once you take these courses, you know, I would say anybody that's reasonably savvy, you know, and especially someone who's been educating themselves all their life, you know, in 3 months easily you can have this down pat. Anyone else, probably 6 months maybe. But again, it's really up to the individual, and it's up to how much time you put in. What you put in, you get out. It's like anything else in life. You get out of whatever you put into anything. So me, I was on a mission when I was trying to learn this stuff, 24/7. I didn't stop. I had tapes rolling in my car, tapes in my backyard, tapes when I was on my porch, tapes when I was in the pool, tapes when I'm driving, tape, just listening to tapes, and then reading when I can. And I was always taking notes. That is the key, in my opinion. Keep your notes, copy all this stuff, make your own book, and what you're really building is a reference book. That's what you're building. Because once you have the basic understanding, you go to your reference book and you pull this form out. There are forms out there on how to write papers. You know, just going into the courts, there are forms all over the place. Even in the rules, you'll find forms. Again, this is not rocket science. And just think of all the morons you know that are lawyers. I mean, anybody paying attention to what's going on, I mean, these guys are so dumb. It's pathetic. All they are is they're minions of the New World Order who are just reacting and regurgitating what they've been told. They're programmed is what they are. They cannot think. When a lawyer moves out of that process and gets into the thinking mode, or if he comes into it as a thinker, okay, we all have to be thinkers, you know. We all have our own mind. As we understand it, so we do it. And you'll get your corrections as life goes on. That's
well,
okay.
That's why I've been when I've been going to the courts, I've been representing myself the past 5 or 6 years. Actually, it's been since 2006, and I've been winning. As a matter of fact, one of the attorneys said, "I can't understand how you're still in your house." I said, "Well, it's not for you to understand." I said, "It's for Jehovah God." I said, "Satan's powerful, Jesus mighty, and Jehovah God's almighty." So, you know, but and also when also get the transcript. And it's just like I said, am I a public servant of this court? And everything I sit there and sent to these attorneys, I said I would like a sworn notarized affidavit responding back. You know, they never respond back to me. And proof of claim, no due process. They had that class even on Channel 13 on a Saturday morning about the no due process and stuff like that, you know. But, you know, it, all this stuff has been very, very helpful and helpful. And even like when I put together for the Board of Appeal for the reevaluation, there was 19 attorneys and myself. I put the whole thing together. Not one of those idiots knew anything. And then they came and asked me to explain it to them. And I'm like, are you kidding? But
yeah,
that was the worst.
They don't know. And they're confused and because they're taught to be mindless, okay?
Yeah.
You know, look what Brent said earlier. He learned and knew more about the Constitution from an eighth grade course than he did in all of his law school. I mean, my brother who went to law school, and he's not a practicing lawyer. He never became a lawyer, but he did get through the school, and he decided not to be a lawyer. Good decision on his half. But anyway, he said they never taught him anything about the Constitution. It was brought up occasionally, but he too was taught just, you know, use statutes. Same thing with the teacher of the Juris Dictionary. You're going to find that that teacher, you, there's a lot of tapes there. You listen to tapes. You got a lot of papers, a lot of PDFs. You want to copy every PDF you can get, put them into a booklet form, and these are all references. But he'll teach you that you don't have to use the Constitution. That confuses the court. Everybody gets confused. Everybody, you know, all this BS. You know, and he's been taught this. He believes this. And this guy, I think, is a reasonably good thinker, but he's clearly not a free thinker. So, but, you know, he says just use the statutes because you can find a statute for anything you want to do using the Constitution, so they claim. Me? I don't use statutes. I use Constitution.
And another thing, too, I forgot to mention. Anytime anybody has any kind of lawsuit or whatever the case is, and a settlement, you want to see that check, what's presented. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
These attorneys automatically tell you to sign, you know? No. I want to see the check, what was given, you know? I found out I was ripped off on a couple of million. And I said, oh, my God. And even, like, for the accidents or whatever the case is, you know, two of my cases came out that was settled, and I knew nothing at all about it. I just found out back in April. So now I'm appealing that. And you know what the, when I written it to the grievance committee, you know what they said to me? We are going to deny this because too much time has passed. So I sent it back because they gave me 5 days to send it back. I said, there is no time limit on criminal cases.
Well, look at there's no statutes of limitation on any case. You know what makes a case old and unable to prosecute or go forward with is a case where the witnesses are dead or their memories are totally lost in that. But if you've got the documentation, you got people that fairly remember that, and if you have, especially if they did affidavits early on, that'd be really good. You know, if you got the evidence, you can go in, you can win the case. There is no such thing as a statute of limitation under common law. When you discovered 30 years from now you've been injured, if there's any way that you can pull the evidence together and go forward, and if the people are still alive to go after, and so on and so forth, it's workable. So people, you know, don't get lost on that statute of limitation stuff, you know?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Right.
Hey, Gerard, I'm going to pass it back to you.
Okay, and I'll be getting you something this week.
Okay, appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. G?
Okay.
What are you eating again?
Customer here. That's Will. You've been unmuted, Will. Go ahead.
Okay, Gerard. I just would like to add something to what Ollie was talking about out west there. There's been a couple developments that I think could influence that case. I have a Marshall's Notice of Demand and Civil Action for Principal, and they are asking Ms. Navarro, who's the judge out there, her relationship to actor Kevin Spacey, the Podesta Group, Saudi Arabia and the MGM resorts. And I thought that was kind of interesting. It might get her off the bench out there.
Well, I want to tell you, I think we can help to get her off the bench if people would give us the affidavits we need of what's going on in that courtroom.
Well, that's true. But I thought that was kind of interesting, and she's wrapped into all that, and they wanted to know her relationship with Harry Reid, too. Of course, he pointed
mm-hmm.
her that.
Yes, Harry Reid is a major player in there.
Right. So.
And his name has not come up anywhere yet, has it? I haven't heard him in the news. He's part of that whole debacle with
Oh,
Courtney.
Yeah, yeah. He's got his finger in it, and his sons, of course. You know, it all started with the gold out there. There's a lot of gold mines, and his sons are very involved in that, and they polluted the whole state out there because there's a lot of mercury, and I can't remember another product that's involved that's very hazardous.
Yeah, we got to get the federal government totally out of these territories, because they're not territories, but there's this land that they seem to be controlling. The states have got to step up and take control of this. This is a state thing, and the states need to be dealing with this, not the federal government.
But anyway, I thought that was interesting. And also, I think Sessions been working behind the scenes that we don't see. I'm still skeptical of him, but that Open Waters Act or whatever it is that they got Robinson on, that's been overturned. And
that case has been overturned?
Yeah, that 90,000 acres on the Texas and Oklahoma border, that's all been turned back to the owners.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so
what's up with Robinson, do we know?
No, I haven't heard anything.
Another horror story with that, I tell you.
He's out. He's in a halfway house or something. But
well, he should be in his own house, you know. And what a horror, you know. You know, if we're young and we go through something like that, that's one thing. But to have to go through something like that in the twilight of your life, that's a horror. And this, and you know what, the IRS seems to go after. And all of these government agencies, but the IRS particularly, they seem to really like to go after people over 60, 70 years old. And it's just so disgusting.
So my feeling on that is Trump and Sessions are going in the back door. And I got a feeling they're going to be released before too long. Obviously, this should be released.
Do you think Sessions is just being quiet for strategic reasons at the moment?
I kind of believe so.
And the president is kind of working a thing there between him, the two of them?
I kind of believe so, yes.
I really hope so, because, look at the – we're gonna have to go after Sessions shortly, one way or the other. We can't sit on our hands too much longer with that guy.
I hear you. I think we're going to see a lot of big changes. There are supposedly about 800 and some indictments issued, which includes some high-level people. And
there are 800? Let's go back here. You're saying that you have word somewhere that there are 800 indictments involved in this process?
I think there's 892 in 24 federal districts.
And this is all up in the, where at? What states are we looking at here? We're looking at Oregon and Nevada and any other states there?
Well, there's a number of states. Washington, D.C. is included. I think there are about 30 in Washington, D.C. I can't remember which was the largest states. There were several with around 50.
So well, you know, with all of the digging going on, okay, and especially on the FBI and making the points of collusion here all over the place, you gotta believe that they're gonna uncover some stuff, concerning Lavoie Finicum and that assassination.
I agree. I got a question for you, John. This says notice of demand, civil action for principal. Further affirmed mm-hmm. with permission of attorney so-and-so under UCC 1-308. Have you ever seen a notice in demand with that on it?
Oh, yeah.
Have you? I have.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm very, very careful of that, because you have to look at that as a whole and see exactly where you're going with that and what the end results you're expecting to get and how you expect to execute it. Because, I mean, you can use those things, and again, I'd be very careful on how. I wouldn't shy away from those statues. Those statues are very important and powerful, so I would use them. But how you exercise them or execute them, a notice and demand is the beginning of the process. It is not due process, and that's what people really need to understand. Let us not be hypocrites. If we're going to expect due process, then we should give due process even to the devil himself. It's common law. It must be done. Doesn't matter. Hitler, doesn't matter. So you got to give it back to them. So you can use, I use notice and demands. When I went after the IRS, I used notice and demands to deal with them. I went through 4 notice and demands. They defaulted 4 times. And then I took it into the court. Okay? And you see, I did the due process there.
Did you use UCC 1-308?
I used those in the notice and demands. I got to think about that.
Okay.
Remember. Wasn't it you and I talking about the IRS a while back personally? Or was it someone else?
It was probably someone else.
Okay. There's someone out there that I was having a conversation with concerning the IRS personally, and I just can't remember who it was, and they was in a premature state. You know, they wasn't really coming down after them yet, but you can see the process of the letter writing going back and forth. Whoever that person was, if you're listening tonight, get back to me because I got something to share with you.
Well, I had talked to you a long, long time ago regarding the IRS. Mine was well progressed.
Okay, and where is it right now?
Well, they got me wrapped up like a nice box, okay?
They put you in the court yet?
No, they've levied and leaned everything. They levied.
Okay, let's not talk about it no more. Give me a call when you can. And look, I am really hard to get. I know a lot of people must be frustrated with me, but I just can't keep up. I literally, have stacks. As much as I try to get rid of paperwork, they just keep going higher and higher. And I got so many things to do. I got phone calls. I ignore phone calls. A lot of stuff. So if you can't get me, get a hold of Jan, and he'll get me because he's alone tonight. He knows that he's here in the conversation. So he can usually get me. I mean, I got to always answer my phone for Jan because he's, running a lot of stuff here as the national leader. And so if you can't get me through him, and I'll get some things to share with you on that.
Okay, very good. But I was very surprised in the closing. They said defendant has been ordered, and defendants Navarro, to give entirely accurate testimony to the best of their knowledge, recollection, and witnesses pursuant to UCC 1-308. I didn't see the relativity of putting that statement in there.
I'd have to look at it and reread the UCC 108?
1-308.
308.
That means all rights reserved, essentially.
Yeah, and they had moved that. Are you sure you got the proper one?
Yeah, 1207 was the previous one.
Okay, because I know, when I learned about this stuff, I learned through the notice and demands through Bill Thornton. Okay, and he uses that, and I had used it, but I'm very careful on how I use these things. And again, you have to know where you're ending up, and you have to be leading to where you're heading up. And you got to head up. You got to end up with a show cause in a courtroom. That's where you got to end up with these things. And once you start using these federal rules, that's federal law. You're now in the federal courts. That's their domain. That's their jurisdiction. Read the Constitution. Anything with this, concerning the laws of the United States and so on. That's their jurisdiction. So, you got to take it into a federal court at that point and deal with the solution. And you have to have a good wherefore clause, and you can't be silly, $1 trillion or something, or $100 million. Come on. Everybody's got to be reasonable, okay? You got to really give it a reasonable value. I mean, if you get your unalienable rights violated, I don't know, maybe it's $10,000, maybe it's $30,000, for each incident. But it's not $30 million. It's not $10 million for each. That's just going way. It's just not realistic. It's wrong, also. And go ahead.
My understanding is that does reserve your rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's what that does, and that's your escape hatch out of the UCC code to go back into common law.
Well, you can call that. There's other ways to do it. You don't have to do it that way. But, you know, it's a way, you know, and again, you know, I do follow the, there's an eight-part process. It's not an eight-part process. There's 8 points that have to be addressed in a notice and demand. Bill Thornton teaches that. And it's, you have to hit every point, okay, all 8 points. And then you have to do a default. You have to give them a grace period. You have to do a default, okay? Again, with the IRS, they did it 4 times. And when they finally came knocking at the door, that's when I knew, okay, that's it. I'm taking it right into the court. And I took it into the court myself. I didn't let them do it. And that's strategic. It's important. If they take you into court, you know, it's really hard to get out of their court. I don't know how you can, to be honest with you, because it's the kangaroo of all kangaroo courts is the IRS courts. And remember, you know, those courts are not, that's an administrative court. They're making believe it's a court of justice. They even use the word common law, but it is not. Not common law, they use court of record, but it is not. They give you a jury, but it's not a free jury, okay? They give you a real judge, but he's not a real, he is a real judge, but he's being rented into the courtroom that's being rented. It's such a sham. It's sickening. It really is. Anyway, enough.
I yield. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, John?
Yeah.
I was looking through the listing of states and cities with the most warrants. California was far and away the biggest winner. They had a total of about 330 warrants. Los Angeles had 172. Sacramento, 52. Frisco had 99. So they had about 330 total. Washington, D.C. didn't look too bad. They only had 35, but then you look at the Virginia area and Maryland area. Virginia had 48 in Alexandria, right across the river from D.C. Maryland, right next to D.C., had 48, so they're up in the 150s. I was kind of disappointed at Chicago or Illinois. There was only 4 there. But the city,
and these warrants are?
These are the warrants that Gary was just talking about that were issued, part of the 800 and some, 842 sealed.
Okay.
Warrants.
Do we have a do you have this documentation somewhere on this, or where are you getting your information from?
It was on the web. It was on the web today. I just copied it off.
And how detailed is it, or is it just listing out basic?
It's just a listing of where the warrants were. I'll look and see if there is a URL here. I'll look and see if there's.
Yeah, drop it in my box. I'd like to go look at that myself. And again,
yep.
You know, look at. We really need people that want to help, that can give us some time and help put things together and prepare it for court cases. And, you know, it's the evidence we need that needs to be collected and put together. And but again, you know, it's difficult. We really can't train people to do it. We have to have people who have some kind of a background in the skills necessary to do it.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in the actual investigating of a particular thing, but the skills that give them the ability to be able to take it, you know, get the direction and run with it. But go ahead,
yeah.
Jim.
I thought it was interesting. Oregon only had 4, and I was sure hoping it was the governor and the judge and people in Burns, you know.
Oh, yeah, that governor was – I don't know if that governor is still in office.
Yeah.
Is she still in office?
I do believe, yes.
Yeah.
Well, and I believe she was one of them that was indicted.
Yeah.
Anna Brown.
So. Yeah.
Wow,
and
there is
a list. There is a list, and I'm sure Jan has it. There are a few people listed, and then many of them are sealed.
Yep.
And I don't know whether it's true, but if you look, Hillary Clinton and John McCain are both wearing boots, okay, on their right foot.
Right.
And they've been told that there might be ankle bracelets under it. So
yep.
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't know that.
Makes a good picture.
Well,
yeah.
You got to believe, if look, if they went after the governor, then they probably went after Comey.
I wouldn't doubt that either.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see what's happening. When are they supposed to be executed, or when is it supposed to become news knowledge?
Well, I've been told that the news media had 48 hours, and I don't remember what date or when that started to start coming clean with their news and actually reporting news and not fake news. And I kind of believe that to be true also. I don't know, because many of these top echelon people have been approached over the years to come clean. And, of course, they lied and they went back to their old ways, and they contact them again in some instances. And they gave them the final notice. And I think Trump gave some final notices on his trip, you know, like in Japan. Abe is nothing but a cabal shill. And yeah. I got a feeling that he maybe told him, you know the rules, and you've been talked to, and this is your last chance. So I don't know whether that happened either, but a lot of things are happening, and it's going to get real exciting any way it goes, okay?
Well, you know, I have to tell you that, you know, dealing with the news media is in our plan also. We've never talked about it, but look at, you can't be news if you're given propaganda and not news. And a lot of things that they call news is really opinion, and they have to make the difference between the two. And so their First Amendment rights to begin with, that they wouldn't call it a right, but the power that the First Amendment gives to the press, that special power, is not to be given to people who are running propaganda or given opinions. It's to the news. The news is reporting the news unbiasedly without an opinion, and just letting the facts be known and getting it out there. You're going to have an opinion thing after a couple of people debating and talking about it. That's fine, but not if you're going to be given the news. The news is the news. It's got to be split away from it, the opinion part of it.
But, John, the Congress passed a law last year stating that it's okay for Congress to use propaganda.
Yeah,
and
well,
therefore the news media.
Yeah,
just following
the
lead.
About it.
Yeah.
Jeez. Not a joke, huh?
Yep.
Well, it's a mess out there, and look at this. Looks really good. Does it really come up to a count of over 800 or 900?
Yeah. The other thing that I thought was interesting was that they claim that the Saudis that were arrested, even the princes and all those people, were 9/11 involved people, and so there are going to be a lot of information coming out on who actually did 9/11 now from the source.
How many coming out of New York, did they say?
Hold on a second. I just put it back.
Is Khan in there? He's been awfully quiet since our last filing.
Yes, that's true, but I doubt that he's in there.
Well, we'll have to work that in there somehow.
Let's see. New York City was the only place in New York they listed. There were 60 out of New York City.
The lead? Did they give any lead to judges down there? There are eight judges that control the whole judiciary of New York State.
Nope, they just gave the locale, New York City, 60. And the City of Brotherly Love is right behind them with 58, Philadelphia.
Yeah. Well, let's hope those judges are in there.
Yes.
All right, well, this is good news, you know. So.
Yep, right.
All right, where are we now? I guess we'll go into the next caller, Gerard.
Okay, ready or not, here we go.
Here we go.
California, Jeremiah, you are in. Hello, Jeremiah, you're unmuted.
Go on, Jeremiah, I've never seen you so quiet. Well, California, Jeremiah going once. Jeremiah going twice. Okay, I guess we'll move to the next.
Next. After Jeremiah, we have Greta.
Again, yes.
You've been unmuted. Are you there?
Greta from, what's that, Missouri? Well, Michigan. That's Michigan, right? MI?
MI, I guess.
Michigan.
Yeah. 989. Greta from Michigan. 989.
She must be there because she got back in the queue. She put herself back.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Maybe, well, she looks like she's got a mic. Maybe her mic is muted on her computer because her mic is unmuted here, but maybe on her computer it's muted and she's talking. I don't know.
Can
we're
you
not
hear
hearing
me?
You. We can hear you
can
now.
You
what
hear
did
me?
You do? Yeah, what was
oh,
the problem?
Oh, my goodness. Apparently that there was a little button on my phone that said muted and I didn't see it there.
Ah, okay.
Ah,
so we
goodness.
Know to tell people
okay.
to look for that little button on their phone.
Yeah. My goodness.
And by the way,
all right, well, good evening. Go ahead.
Good evening. By the way, we only have one person in the queue, so if anybody else wants to get into the queue, star six, get into the queue. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Hey, thank you. Listen, I sure would like to be in a position to greatly help your cause for your sheriff brochures. I know that money is big and you need it. And my goodness, my case is over 700,000. Guys, it's so broad spectrum jacked up that I hardly know where to begin, but they're still blowing my phone up. They're still calling and threatening me. They want my father's home that is in my name. Joint full rights survivorship with my brother and myself, equally in our names. My brother is presently living there, but it's still in my name. And I mean, they're doing everything that they're big enough to do to try to force me to relinquish it. Now, I have a small theory, though I know nothing about the law, I mean zero, that in the
well,
event
what
they
exactly,
could man...
What exactly, let me ask you, what exactly are they doing particularly? I mean, they're writing letters, or they... you know,
no,
what,
they're
what
calling
they
me. They won't put nothing on paper. No, no.
And who's
they
calling
call
what
me.
What are they saying?
It is the gal that sued me, the niece that sued me, her attorney... calls my phone and leaves messages for me to get a hold of him. They want to resolve this almost $300,000 they say that I still owe them, though they've already taken over $700,000 to date. They've done it illegally. They incarcerated me for 4.5 months. My charge was indefinite incarceration, civil contempt of court.
Have
civil
you taken
contempt
our
of court.
Courses?
You know, guys, I got to tell you, it overwhelms me because I'm not a legal eagle. I'm in the medical
well,
field.
That's what, look at it. If you're in the medical field, then what are you, a registered nurse or?
I'm a bedpan brigadier that does the blood draws.
Okay. Well, that's okay. Look it. You don't have to be some kind of professor to understand law, or it's not, you don't have to, it's not like rocket science. It is really simple. Look at the only different. Look at you're learning some new things, and if you keep good notes and make notes and you know put together the necessary.
I have. You guys have my affidavit. You have it. You have my affidavit.
Right, but my point
for,
is.
That, further, go ahead.
You can.
Go ahead.
Well, the point is that you can get educated. Anybody who just believes and goes into this will accomplish the goal. The only question is how long is it going to take you to accomplish the goal? That's the only question. And the answer to that
I
is
guess,
how much time are you willing
right.
to put into it or you have available
I,
to put
I guess,
into it.
Right. I guess that my biggest conundrum is the fact that I am a lone wolf. My last attorney was arrested right in the courtroom and then later fined $400,000 as the incentive to drop me as his client. It was quite effective. And I can't say as I blame them, do you? Furthermore, they have done so many egregious things. I mean, they foreclosed on my marital home. They showed that I foreclosed on it. There was never a mortgage on it. I owned it outright. I just come across this paperwork online. I didn't even know that there was a foreclosure with my name attached to it. So that's how their loophole
yeah,
was for
sneaky,
taking
yes.
my home.
Yes, they do.
I'm going to tell you something. I'm the lone wolf in that courtroom, and I don't like the odds. I don't want to go back in that courtroom. I've been in jail for 4.5 months. I'm not going back to jail. They bring out a warrant and they wave it around and then they make it go away and they wave it around and they make it go away. They've asset stripped me 5 times to date. And I got to tell you, you know, They're still attacking. Now they want my father's marital home, or my father's home, not marital, but his home.
Is organized crime? Are you aware of organized crime being involved in this? I mean, look, we know the judiciary is organized crime, you know, so it appears. But I mean, are you aware of any kind of organized crime involved in this?
Well, the gal that sued me works for a courthouse that happens to be in the state capital of Lansing, Michigan. She works in the courthouse over there. This occurrence is happening in Flint. She just kept suing me until something would stick. She'd sue me, and then they'd deny it. And so I thought it was all over with. Then she'd sue me again, and they would deny it. And I thought it was all over with. Then she changed attorneys, and after she did that, it was all over. It was all over. There was nothing legal going on in that courtroom thereafter.
Right.
I cannot believe that I have been incarcerated for 4.5 months. And right now there's, I think, a bench warrant that comes out to play and goes away. I'm like a living rat under a rock, afraid to get pulled over for fear I'll go back to jail. I've seen things in that jail that nobody should have had. It's a wonder I lived. I'm just telling you, I'm not going back to jail.
Yeah,
but I need somebody.
Now, listen.
I promise you that the first 100,000 that somebody gains from representing me, you guys can have. I'm not even about the money.
Yeah, well, you know,
I just want to be free of this.
Again, we appreciate what you're saying, but we can't get personally involved. Not only do we not have the time, okay?
Isn't there some attorneys in earshot that aren't afraid of a rogue judge? I need an attorney with a backbone that is not afraid of a rogue judge.
This is an honest statement. I only know of one attorney I could, reference you to. But even that individual, you know, he's overloaded. I know that, and he's not in your state. And the other thing is that going into a case like this would be very dangerous for him. So I do appreciate, we all appreciate this problem also. But here, look, you can do a couple of things. You can educate yourself, and you got to get the upper hand. Okay, once you educate yourself. We can give you ideas and different things, what you could do or look into. But first you have to have that education, and that is a major problem. That does take time. So that's and time doesn't seem to be anything that you really might have.
Can I make a note here?
Yeah.
The last gentleman that represented me, I'd like to assume as an attorney was somewhat educated. I'd like to think so. He had a degree that said he was. He was arrested in court. Same court. So, I just don't want to go back to jail.
What was the charges
I'm not going back. Arresting him
in court?
Contempt of court.
Yeah,
he was trying to enter evidence on my behalf because I was not allowed to speak, enter evidence, or bring in a witness. I was allowed to do nothing.
Well, I'll tell you what probably happened there. Look, they have these meetings in the back rooms, and the rules of the game for that particular case is laid out, and that attorney was probably told by the judge, look, you're not going to go here and you're not going to go there. Now let's get out there and see what's going to happen. And he went there, and he hit him for contempt of court. And look at that. That in itself is
fraud. And then they fined him
$400,000. If he was arrested for contempt of court for trying to defend you, and he was fined or threatened with a fine of whatever amount because he was trying to defend you, that is no doubt fraud on the court. And
Amen.
Now,
Amen.
Is this a state court?
It's a probate court in Flint, Michigan,
okay.
the same city that has been known nationwide for the corruption broad spectrum in the water department.
Listen, I'm going to give you the solution, but you need to educate yourself because only you can do this. No lawyer is going to touch the case. We don't have
Why?
The ability to. Well, obviously, like you told them, they're going to be put in jail. Okay, they're going to be found
to contempt, but there is a solution.
There is a solution.
Okay,
but you have to have an education. You sound like you've got enough experience and that you're smart enough to be able to get through this quickly. I want to tell you something. I did jurisdiction over the weekend. On a Friday night, I started studying jurisdiction. By the end of the day, Sunday, I had been through the whole thing, had all my notes and everything together. Okay? There's tapes there, and you listen to tapes over and over. Even after that, you go back to certain tapes. Same thing with Bill Thornton. Okay, and you go through this whole process. I did it very quickly, and some people can do that if you got the time. If you can give a couple of weeks to focus, you can get the education quickly, and you can get the process laid right out. And what you need to do, the solution to your case, is to move this into federal court for cause. And what's your
Amen.
Cause?
Amen. You
okay?
have my affidavit. You guys your, have my affidavit, sir.
Here is your cause. Okay. The
okay.
fact that judge committed fraud on a court, that makes it a federal case to begin with. But the key things that bring you into the federal court is their lack of jurisdiction for that court. That is not a court of record. That is a kangaroo court. It's a statutory court. It's anything but a court of record. It's anything but a common law process. So you got no the jurisdiction. You pull them out for jurisdiction. Due process, you're not being given. Fraud on a court, those three things alone. And I'm sure once you go through everything on your story, you put your affidavit together, which you've already done, but maybe you got more to add to it. If you go through it very carefully, you'll probably find a whole bunch of other things, okay, that you can add to make this into the federal court. And then you got to go after the judge. You have to go after the lawyer on the other side because there's collusion there, okay? And and you bring it all together with your affidavit, you have a good chance of winning this problem. But you got to get out of that courtroom because they're only going to damage you more and more and more. You got to get into
the federal
court.
Well, that's the truth. And I guess my question is, do they have the legal right to mandate?
What authority? Who's got the fiduciary? Who's trying to take the fiduciary authority? It sounds like they don't really have it yet, but they're trying to get it. What's behind this fiduciary authority process, that they want to give to a lawyer ultimately? You got a brother and you, right?
We're the sole
owners in
my father's home.
And your father's still alive?
No, he passed away November
of last
year.
Okay, so you and your brother are the owners of the home, okay?
Yeah.
And now a cousin or something is trying to get this?
No. They've got a lien on the title. My brother would like to sell it.
Who's got a lien
on the title? The jacked up court over in Flint that sued me that unlawfully stripped me of everything.
Okay, so that's what you want to take that over into the federal court. Okay, but even with a lien on the property, is this a? I'm trying to think of the term that they have for this.
Can they put a lien on my property on my father's inheritance?
The only way that a lien can be placed on a piece of property ultimately is through a court. I mean, there's what's called a mechanic's lien, but that means they have to have done work.
The judge signed it. I saw her handwriting. She signed the seizure or the lien.
Yeah, but fine. Signing the lien is one thing. Was there a court process that took place to make that lien? Was there due process to get that lien?
Not that I'm aware of. They didn't invite me to the party.
What about your brother?
Not that I'm aware of.
Take it to the federal court. Doesn't exist. Look, there's got to be for someone to put a lien, they have to sue you and lose. And the
well, they did sue
the
me
lien.
For support over $300,000. They did sue me for that. They brought a judgment against me, and they're basing it on a judgment.
Whoa! Let's go back to the $300,000. Okay. What was that lawsuit about?
It was about my assets that they had already stripped me of over $700,000. They kept making up numbers out of thin air. They'd hold court with nobody there.
Understand.
And by the way, I have proof of everything I speak of. I do have proof of everything I talk of.
I don't understand what it was they sued you for. Sure, an amount of money, but what did they sue you for? A contract, a violation of a contract? I mean, what did they sue?
Undue influence. Was what the jury trial was over.
Okay,
was undue influence.
All right. Undue influence about what on who? What?
That I made my husband marry me. That I made him marry me. Which was the most insane thing ever.
Again,
of course, he was deceased, so he couldn't speak. It was his niece who was the one that sued me.
Okay.
And I got to tell you, there is a paper trail that is so deep pertaining to what she had stirred up and conjured up behind the scenes that did come out. I have paperwork to prove that. She attempted to have a sheriff's department to go in and suggest that he was not even in his right mind while he was still alive. They did, the same sheriff's department did an investigation while he was still alive to find out if this man was a cognate thinking, and he thought circles around them. They had to close the case, and there was documentation of such. That same sheriff's department is the one that put me in jail, the same one that investigated my husband and closed the case was not valid.
Okay, but what?
Wow.
There is no connection between that and your deceased husband and the home. The home, there's no real direct connection there. This is your father's home, right? And they went and
this
she went
is now
you.
My father's home. That's correct.
Okay.
This is
so,
my dad's. And
right,
they came
on,
and seized the bunch.
Hold on.
Okay.
Listen, let me just answer the questions, and we can't spend too much longer because there's other people, and we're already close. But look, so it's your father's home, so there's no real connection with the niece of your husband, correct? Now, there is she's coming out after you personally, and because the house is an asset, and you're part owner with this, of that house with
That's
your brother.
Correct.
And they're trying
That's
to
correct.
Take it. Now, I don't know how the law works on that. The fact that that is a joint ownership, one thing. The other thing is, are you registered in the county under the Homestead Act in that house?
Well, I used to be until my brother moved into it.
Okay, well, is he carried on that Homestead Act? And if not, I think there's a year. How long has he been there?
He's been there less than a year.
Okay, because I think there's
almost.
A year you can kind of just flip it. I had some knowledge of that a while back, and I had to deal with it once in a lawsuit where I was involved with, and that's how I learned about the Homestead Act. But I know there was a home that I was doing some work on. They owed me a lot of money, and then something happened when they. There was a fire in the house, and the insurance got the insurance money, and I was the contractor on it. And something, because they were out of the house, for a year. If you're out of the house for a year, you lose that Homestead Act security, So if you're out of the house less than a year, you need to make sure that that's attached and connected. And I'm not sure. You might need a lawyer to do that, because I don't understand enough of that.
I believe I went down to the city clerk's office and already had made up that paperwork for the homestead.
Okay.
I already did that.
Go back and know. And then if it's there,
I walked in there in person. Right.
Okay.
I don't know if it's still there, but it was there.
Well, make sure it's there, number one. Make sure if your brother's the one living there, that he's the one, his name is on that. Okay. If both your names are on that, I don't know how that works out. But that protects your house totally. In other words, they could be here till the cows come home, and they're not going to get you home, at least not under their act. And that doesn't mean that they can't find some sneaky way to break the law and do things and just push their way in. And again, that's where knowledge comes in. If I were you, I'd be educating myself. And I'll tell you what, anybody that doesn't even have a legal problem should be educating themselves right now. Don't be playing around with this. Have the knowledge and the ability to defend yourself, because one day or another, you're going to have to. Well, you're going to have to defend your spouse or your children or someone close to you in the family. And even there, it becomes a problem, but you can do it.
Can I ask how long do you think, sir, before the affidavits that you guys possess, and I'm assuming and praying that you do, in fact, have my affidavit. I've mailed it off twice. It was kind of MIA the first time, and I'm assuming and
we
I'm
have
hoping
a
without
stack
a doubt
of
you have it.
We have a stack of affidavits. Not all of them have been put into the court. I need to go through that and make sure they are all in the court just as filed.
How would I know that you actually are in receipt of it? Because I mailed it to you, but I'm not certain that you in fact have it.
Well, you
How
know what
I
I'll
know
do
that?
Is it's a matter of time, okay? I just have to find the time. I have to sit down and, I've heard people say, hey, ask your secretary to take care of this for you, to do this for me or that. I don't have a secretary. I'm my secretary.
Bless
you.
Okay.
And so I do everything, and I got stacks of paper.
Right.
I'm even creating website, I do a lot of the work
I
on
understand.
the the sheriff's website. You know, I just finished writing the book for the sheriffs. And
Thank you for everything that you do.
But the thing is I got to find the time to go through, because I got a whole stack of them that I haven't even gotten into the court or anything, but we do want to try to get them into the court just to be there. And it makes it, at least for a future situation, and it's been recorded in the court. But, you know, I got to go find the time to sit down and kind of just check them all off. And again, you know, if I had somebody that, is volunteering their time to do things, I can probably PDF them and fax them over to someone else who could then list them on a chart and then get...
Well, how far out do you think you are from doing something with a stack of affidavits in which you guys possess?
We're fighting for battle for power. And look at the...
Okay.
How do we get power? Okay. We got to get power. First of all, is critical mass. That's the key. How do we get critical mass? We keep building up membership, and until that point comes when all of a sudden the floodgates open and hundreds of thousands of people just pour in. That's the critical mass we're looking for. So that comes through membership, number one, potentially. That's a slow mover, but it could happen any time now because we have a lot of members. The other thing is working with the president, okay? Once the president starts to really, hopefully, he's going to start working with us in a more direct way. Excuse me. But once that happens, and there's an acknowledgement of who we are with the president in some way, that can cause critical mass. We also, the committees of safety, okay, that can help for the membership to cause critical mass. This sheriff's thing is huge. I mean, look at, we work with the sheriffs and get this going. That can cause critical mass very quickly, too. Jeff Sessions, if he were to finally send some prosecutors over, I mean, we'd be moving in the courts, and critical mass would follow immediately behind that. So there's numerous ways to get this to that point. How long and when, that's on God's timetable, and he hasn't shared that with me. So I
understand.
You know?
So basically, once you decide to do something with the affidavits, what then occurs to them? Does that mean that they're going into court or what?
Once we get the U.S. attorneys, okay, working in the case, because that's what we're looking for. After all, we're just the grand jury. Now, it doesn't mean the grand jury can't sue civilly, because we're going to do that too, and I want to move that way. But those civil suits is going to be in a different direction. But once we get the attorney general, or, you know, giving us some U.S. attorneys and starts working on these cases, then every affidavit in this case is a potential case, okay? And we're showing the fact that there is subversion against the United States of America by enemies both foreign and domestic.
Every affidavit
we have is a piece of proof towards that fact of all these things that are taking place. The people are being beat up everywhere, see?
I was accused of stabbing my husband. I want you to know that. I was accused of stabbing my husband. That was to taint the jury so they would come back with a verdict in their favor. It worked quite well. But the problem is that I never stabbed my husband. He passed away in a hospital, which he was in there for a week and a half before he passed away. Thank God he didn't pass at home. But the point being is there was no documentation on any medical documentation. There was nothing on the death certificate. And there was certainly never the police called. And I'm sorry, but if somebody gets stabbed and you're in the hospital, somebody better call the police and make a report.
Right.
So there was nothing to substantiate that allegation. Nothing.
Yeah.
And by the way, it should have been a criminal charge against me. I should have been criminally charged if I had done that. But they went on record and told the jury that I did that. And they passed around a 3-foot by 3-foot poster that each one looked at in horror, like I had done something terrible. I tried to defend myself from the witness stand, and the judge made me shut up. I know you want me to go away.
Yeah. Well, we can't talk too much more about the case, and those are details.
Please.
You know, all of this stuff together.
I know.
You got to get it together in your affidavit, and I know you have got a lot of stuff.
I've got you. You've got my affidavit. I want you to be very clear on that. You have my affidavit. You keep saying get your affidavit together, and this is the second time I've done it.
Your affidavit is something that grows and continues, and every time I write a paper or write a book or anything, I go back and I review it, and I add, and I correct, and I change, and I go back. It doesn't matter. If I go back and read anything that I've ever written, I got something to change or add or do something with it. You know, it's almost like a living document. But you know, it's just constantly.
Such a joke to be a civil contempt of court, indefinite incarceration. Has anybody even ever heard of that?
What is it?
Four and a half months. Pardon?
What did you call
civil,
it? What
was civil, it? Civil contempt of court, indefinite incarceration.
Yeah, to my knowledge, no such thing as indefinite.
Bless you. And not nobody else that I've ever spoke of has ever heard of such a thing.
There is such a thing. When the judge is trying to get you to comply to an order, your time in there is until you cooperate. Like,
bless your heart, but if you're not allowed to speak, if you're not allowed to speak, enter evidence or bring in a witness.
But there are two things that control
that.
There are two things that control that, though, Gerard.
Right.
Number one, it's a common law court, and that's not a common law court, the court of record. So they don't, without being a court of record, they don't have the authority to fine or incarcerate. So that's one thing. Okay, since they're statutory, then they call it civil. It's statutory. It has no power and authority. The other thing I'm pretty sure, I don't know if Brent is still here, but I'm pretty sure Brent made a point that there is a limitation. I could be erroring that, but I'm pretty sure he said there's a limitation. And there's other factors involved. And
well, I'm going by Brent's teaching that one of them technically doesn't usually run more than a few months. 3 months, 4 months tops. But the other one, you're there as long as you don't comply. That's it.
Well, were they trying to make you comply to something?
They
wanted me to give $200,000 to her. I didn't have 2 cents to give anybody. They had stripped me of everything. I had nothing. They had all that I ever possessed. They had all that I ever possessed. I was 50 years old when I married my husband. I was the director of marketing for Genesee County. I had a decent income. I was a good human being that had never broke the law. And then now I'm in jail for 4.5 months while they asset strip me. I've been asset stripped 5 times so far, sir. 5 times. And most recently, it was last month. They asset stripped me again. How many times do I have to go to nothing and keep getting run through the ringer?
I can only, you know, again tell you what I think you can do, and I can't go any
further
because I don't have the time or the ability.
No. It's okay.
Myself.
It's okay. Please
forgive.
But
here's what you
got to
do. Your education is the key. No matter what, you need that education.
Okay.
Even if you can't get it in a ton of time, you need that education anyway. Get that education going. When you feel confident to move forward in a federal court, okay, then I can give you some advice. As long as you've got the knowledge and the areas, I can direct you here and direct you there. I can even share some memorandums with you and some other ideas.
Okay.
But you need to understand the process and how the paperwork flows and goes. And that is
thank
the
you.
Key.
I've taken enough time. I'm sorry.
All right. Appreciate the call, though.
Bless you all. Thank you. And listen, I just want to say real quick, sir, that woman, that judge that did that, there was no way I could comply. She wouldn't let me speak. So have you complied with the court's orders? Or how can I if I can't even show that you guys possess what it is you said I had? I have the receipt. I can show where I paid for what I have, but they possess it. You see what I'm saying?
I understand.
It was no way for me to win. No way. Anyway,
if they win a case, just so you know, if they win a case, they can order you to produce and show anything you own in order to try to take those things away from you. But if you don't have anything and you can't, and they got the list of everything already, there's nothing they could do. They shouldn't be able to do what they did to you. It's only those who refuse to give the information. They have to have knowledge of something existing somewhere that you're refusing to give up, and there's got to be something. They can't just say, you know, because you're not giving us something, we're going to, you know, put you in jail until you comply.
Listen to me. It's so deep and so wide, and I'm just so thankful that I have the documentation to prove everything I speak of. So there you go.
Well, look,
and God willing, I'll
bet
it. Okay,
get
I will.
and let's
I
talk
will.
Some more when you have the education, and I'll give you some thoughts
bless
and ideas
you.
And directions to go. You know.
Okay, thank you guys. I appreciate
thank
you.
You.
Good night.
Good night.
Good. Okay. Next caller, Gerard.
Next caller. We got Ollie. You're all unmuted. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hey.
Oh, okay. Hey, there, in the last few weeks, there's been a lot of rumors running around about 700-800 indictments and this and that and deep state. Late this afternoon, Sessions come out on Fox News. He is paving the way for a special investigator for Uranium One. Okay. There is going to be some big changes in the next few days and weeks. They could be from moderate to extreme. For some people, they will be extreme. For most of us, they'll just be big changes. For a few, that they'll be totally unaware, and they'll wake up in 3 or 4 months, and they'll look around and say, what happened? Along with those rumors is this, and it might be good advice for whatever happens. They say if you got any extra cash in the bank, take it out, that the finance system might be down for a couple of weeks. Stock up on food and whatnot. But back years ago, this was, and everybody was doing this in the fall. Everybody's stocking up for the winter. In the last 6 months, all the new neighbors that moved in, I made a special attempt at meeting them. I'm very acquainted with all my neighbors, close neighbors right now. I will say this, that there could be some big spiritual changes. However, if your heart is in the right place, you have an umbrella of protection. There's a big umbrella of protection all over the world. The Trump movement is global, and the whole world is rooting for Trump, and the whole world is wanting to go back to their roots, establish their nations again. And like I say, there's going to be some big changes real shortly. However, we will get through it, and we will hopefully, in the process, we will get this nation back. And I'll tell you what, I am so sick and tired of the lies and the corruption and the things they are doing to the children and the things they are doing to innocent families. They're tearing families apart. And I made the statement the other day, if something doesn't happen, there will be no life left on this earth at the end of this decade. They will all be gone. But like I say, just get a little bit prepared, and when we'll make it through, and hopefully, we will get this nation back. I yield.
Hey. Thank you, Ollie. Next question. Crystal. You're unmuted, Crystal.
Hey, Gerard, it's not Crystal, it's Jeremiah.
Hey, what's going on?
What's up, man? How are you? It's good to hear you. I hear an echo, though. Seems like someone has their speaker turned up. Whoever has their speaker turned on, can you please turn your sound down a little bit? Thank you very much. Gerard, one thing I wanted to say was there was the lady that was on a minute ago talking about the mortgage issue, right? And having had this, education on a constitutional law and federal questions and things of that nature, I couldn't help but actually run her situation through an analysis of her in a direction, and I came up with one thing, that her case does not violate the Dormant Commerce Clause, okay? But the one thing that I did want to find out about her situation was whether it was a state coming after her. I want to ask that real quick. If she's still on the call, the lady with the family issue with the property.
Well, she's not doesn't have a mic open though. We'd have to find her. Greta, it was. But basically, okay. she's in the probate court, which is a state court. Okay, so she's in probate, and somehow. I don't know how they're doing this. I mean, because...
And so there's a taking of property. So here's my main point. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Here's my main thing. if Congress has created a statute that preempts the state action, so you got a state court, which means that there's a state agency or something bringing a state action. Now, if Congress, federal Congress, right, has actually already made a statute that destroys the state's legislation, just preempts it, right, then the state action is unconstitutional. And you have a claim.
It's a pretty simple thing, and I don't know how they're getting away with this, because it's very simple. It appears that the Homestead Act is still enforced in this property, okay, number one, that they're trying to get. I don't understand how the probate court plays a role in this, because there's no fiduciary authority given to
What do you mean Homestead Act? Help me out on that. What do you mean? I heard you mention it before. What does that mean?
Yeah, when you purchase a home or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, if you're living in that home and you register under the Homestead Act, then nobody could take that property away from you.
Is she registered? That's the question.
Yeah,
here's the question.
You register with the county. She said she is. So no one can take that away. Huh?
That's it right there. So that if all you have to do is file an affidavit into a separate federal lawsuit against the state, challenging their action against you as unconstitutional, and you can use
there must be some other court that she's opened up into, because it doesn't make sense for the probate court to be involved. Look, a probate court can't get involved unless there has been given some fiduciary authority and a proof of claim is in process. Those are the two. It gets back to the same thing with the IRS, Form 56 and 4490. It's the same thing. They have to have a proof of claim, and they have fiduciary authority.
Who has to have proof of claim? I'm just curious.
There has to be a proof of a claim against her, and there has to be a fiduciary authority over the estate.
Mm,
so the proof of the claim might be available, okay, because it appears that she has lost to a lawsuit of $300,000 by the niece. Now, that's another thing that has to be dealt with, appears that that was done criminally. But in any event, there appears to be a legal lien against her. They're trying to apply it to the property because that seems to be the only asset available for them to seize. But the problem is it's co-owned with the brother, and number one, and one or both, if it both own them, one, I think it only requires one of them to be in it. But when they have to make sure that that is still standing under the Homestead Act. As long as it's under the Homestead Act, they can't break through that. But that doesn't mean that they're not going to do illegal things to do that anyway.
But, you see, here's the thing. This is why she should file her own complaint and start a separate suit against the state.
Yes.
Absolutely. Because she has to establish that action and make the claim basically that there's an unconstitutional law being used against them, and it's basically a violation of the constitutional statute. And at that point, she's going to basically have the agency back down. And they'll probably try to come back around again for some, you know, in another way.
Well,
but
the problem is that she can't use a lawyer, number one. Okay, and I don't think she could probably afford one at this point, But the other thing is she's not educated enough to do it, and that's why I'm trying to encourage her to get educated.
Well, if she wants to, she can contact me.
Mm-hmm. Well, look,
she can contact me directly, 415-424-3276. That's area code 415-424-3276, and I'll give you a legal education. But the other thing, question for you, John, on another topic altogether, the sheriff, this was something that was concerning me. I was concerned because I know that you guys are attempting to have the sheriff wield the power of the county, but how about focusing on the juries wielding the power of the county, you see, and all the people in the community? How do we wield the power of the county instead of relying on the sheriff? If we can't rely on the sheriff, then what?
Well, no, look, we're hitting every potential power or empowerment of the people we can give. And one of their empowers is their constitutional protector, which is the sheriff. So let's educate him. It's something that, on the one hand, we should have done this earlier, but on the other hand, I really don't think we're ready to do it in the proper way. You know, with the education we've got just from our, doing what we're doing, has really put us in a position where I think we were able to put together a good book and a plan with a website to really educate all of our sheriffs. And, you know, so again, you know, you learn as you hit and miss, you know.
Well, my question, if you don't mind staying focused, yeah.
The sheriff is just one more thing in our toolbox that we're adding. You know, we're dealing with the sheriff. We're dealing, of course, with the grand jury. We're dealing with the committees of safety, and I think I mentioned the president and or the sheriff. So we got like four things, and if we find another thing that we can add to that, we will. But right now, look at taking political control through the committees of safety to take the committee man process back. That's important. Okay, we can prevent any uneducated individuals from running for office. In other words, when I say uneducated, I mean people who don't understand and have a good knowledge of the Constitution. You can't exercise properly your office, government office, if you don't have an understanding of the Constitution. So anyway, let me just finish. Political process. All right. Judicial process, which is the juries, okay, and then of course the power of the sheriff to protect and do what has to be done. So there's the three powers that we're working on.
Well, I just want to say for everyone that's listening, it doesn't matter about your education, as long as you understand the effect of your legal acts or lawful acts and your actions. You should be fine when you embark on your journey of jural societies and the organization of common law jural societies. So don't worry about your education, but you definitely want to have knowledge, okay, of the effect of your legal acts. In other words, when you become a common law jury member, which is basically what this call is about, right? Organizing jural societies, but kind of on a national level.
We're organizing the administrators for the grand common law jury system. And in other words, the government is not capable, nor can they be trusted to control the juries. Yeah, they can have a process, and they can exercise that process to call a jury, but they can't really bring the jury together and orientate them because they've proven that they can't be trusted. Just the mess of our judicial system, the inability of the sheriff having any knowledge of common law or knowledge on how to call a grand jury, all of that is proof, positive.
Well, let me ask you a question. Are you a registered voter?
Who, me?
Yes.
Of course I am, but it has nothing to do with being a citizen.
Well, the reason why the reason why I asked you the question was because there's a case from 1986 in Minnesota, right, their appellate court, where it mentions qualified electors. It says qualified electors within city charter, so it's basically defined within the city's charter, provision governing submission of ordinance to vote of electors means those people who have constitutional and statutory right to vote, whether or not they are registered to vote. So what I'm suggesting is that everybody that's out there that's a registered voter is also a qualified elector in this moment and right now, actually able to appoint and also elect basically public officials. So it's a good status to have, you know, your registered voter status. I wouldn't shy away from that if anyone is on the call listening. You understand that it's been used synonymously with the term qualified elector, which is a common law feature. But here's the interesting thing. When it comes to formation of local juries, what the municipalities like to do, from my understanding, is form the juries from a large pool of constituents based broadly around the municipality. So it's not going to be from your community. It's going to be maybe someone from the north or south or east or west side, and you don't know, and they don't know you. Okay, so this is the problem with what we have going on right now. But obviously, I mean, I'm getting too deep into the idea of the effect of jury societies, because I'm trying to figure out where your focus is tonight, and like, what, you know, you're talking about sheriffs, but how can we wield the power of the county without relying on the sheriff? What if he's a flake or she's a flake?
Well, again, you know, if we have the power of the people, which is the right to exercise our government by consent, which means we control the jury box, both the grand jury and the trial jury, indictment is a simple way to get rid of someone that's in bad behavior. Look at, just like a judge, anybody else that is elected, okay, or appointed in office, they get to serve and enjoy that service of office as long as they are in good behavior. The opposition of that is bad behavior. If they're in bad behavior, it means that they're violating someone's right because they're breaking the Constitution. They're not keeping their oath. The administrators of the grand jury, of the common law grand jury and trial jury, the administrators have the ability to contact that individual once that's in process, of course, to contact that individual to notify them that they are in bad behavior, they need to fix their problem, and you need to tell them how to fix it. And if they refuse to do it, then the administrators would bring it to the next grand jury in session, and the grand jury has two options. They can make a direct notification and give them the opportunity of mercy and the ability to correct or face a potential indictment. And if they don't respond within whatever 3 days, whatever the jury gives them, the grand jury gives them,
you know what?
The grand jury can vote on indictment and that person is removed from office, no matter who they are.
That's fine. That's fine. You know what would be awesome, though, for me to part with? I want everyone to remember this if you can. From this court case in Minnesota, and I'm going to get out of here after this because I want you get to the end of your call here. But this court case is from, again, 1986, and it's based on Constitution, Article 7, Section 1, okay? It's called Gould versus City of Bloomington, okay? And it's 394 Northwest 2D149.
But what it says is about now, though?
Well, here's the thing. It's a definition of a qualified elector, and it says, qualified elector.
But here's the problem. It's not the United States Supreme Court case, right?
I know. It doesn't. Well, here's the thing. It's persuasive authority.
Yeah, it has public. It amounts to hella beans, in my opinion. And I know that lawyers
no.
like to give this.
No,
let me This is a con.
I didn't,
I'll let you finish in a minute. But just so you know that it is a con against us, ultimately by the minions that exercise this, but of course the powers that be above them that control the minions, which again is the bar lawyers, okay, they've gotten the people hoodwinked to believe that these cases is the common law. That is not the common law. It has no
I'm not
power,
saying
no
it is.
Authority, no right.
I know. Look, what I'm suggesting is this case is merely persuasive authority. It's an ambulance. I'm not sick. Actually, you know what? That's funny. But they might be wanting to take me to the 5150 ward. Anyways. The whole thing about it is it's not the it doesn't carry the weight, John, okay, of a Supreme Court decision, but it is persuasive and you could use it. And
I would argue against
that's fine. You can do that. Let me finish my point about it, and then you can tell me what you want because I'm going to close out my conference here. You guys are all registered voters out there, but I would stop referring to myself as a registered voter. Instead, everyone should just be calling themselves qualified electors because it's basically, from the case law that I see, it's almost the exact same thing. You have all the same privilege.
I've only called myself a registered voter only once, and that's when you asked me. I told you,
And the other thing is, do you have a maybe you should have a registration or a registry on your website. People can actually register themselves as qualified electors and registered voters from their precincts. So maybe that should be a field in your registration box. Why? Because we need to let people register their qualified elector status because being registered is super crucial to having your vote count. I've seen tons of case law that support this argument. If you're not registered, your vote as an elector really don't count. All right.
I hear what you're saying. I'm going to think about how I might respond to you, and let's talk about that next week. And the other thing, you know, this idea what was it, as far as, you know, court cases having power and mm-hmm. And some kind of weight in another court case. Let's talk about
persuasive authority.
We're out of time. I that's a good conversation to have. Let's move on to the next person.
Awesome.
Talk some more next week, right?
Why don't you have me as a guest next week or something, and I'll come on for sure. We'll have an hour or 45 minutes.
We'll see how we'll do. We'll try to get you in the beginning. All right. I don't know about you'd have to talk with the national leadership and see how we would have you as a guest and so on if we could. I'm not going to make that decision, but you know, we'll definitely try to get in the beginning, and let's get into that conversation concerning, and
let's
get other people involved too, talking about, you know, what power, what authority any kind of a court,
right,
not of record, has in any other court. Because remember, they're not courts of record. So they have no record to be recorded. It's irrelevant. It means nothing.
Excellent. Thanks, John.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's take Will, I guess, as our last caller, Gerard. All right, I'll hit the next button. Gerard's asleep at the wheel again. Will, go right ahead. You got the mic.
All right, yeah, John. I think the answer to Jeremiah's committee of safety out there, get some people and get them organized, and then you got some power. Get them educated.
Yeah, there are the electors right there. You're right. That, you know, that, and you know, remember, the committee of safety become the committeemen. We gotta bring them back into the committeeman process to take control. And we have a plan for that, but it's not time. We have to win the courts before we can win the political process. We tried winning this problem and many other problems by winning the political process, and we discovered it's an impossibility. So we took it into the courts to win it, and then we discovered the mess of the courts, and then we realized, well, look, we can't take anything back until we take the courts back. That's where it's got to start. Take the courts back, and literally overnight, let me repeat that, literally overnight, we take back the political process. Now, literally overnight means when we start to focus our attention towards it to do it. We have to get into the courts, get that foothold. But I'm going to tell you, as soon as we focus our attention onto the political process from within the power of the courts as we the people, it'll be literally overnight taking back the political process.
Right. I agree totally. And I think if more people would spend their time understanding the Constitution and go on statutes and codes, that's an old case. It won't fly today. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's irrelevant anyway, and we'll talk some more about it next week, because it has no power, it has no authority. Why? Because it's not a court of record. Only a court of record has power and authority. What's a court of record? The only court of record on this level where the judges make decision is the United States Supreme Court. And what power and what authority do they have? They have the power and the authority over all federal judges. You see, they can make the correction, make the changes, make the orders, whatever they want to do over the judges. But if their decision is wrong to us, it's null and void. And what's the ruler to make it null and void? If it violates any of our unalienable rights in any way, shape, or form, it is null and void, and that's our position. And we trump the United States Supreme Court in that kind of a thing.
Absolutely. I got some good news, I think. The judge granted Ryan Bundy release to a halfway house, and the Bundys are very happy about it, and I see a weakening out there. I think old Navarro is going to cave on him.
Well, I have a feeling. I have a feeling all of these
indictments?
Yeah, is that what they are? They're sealed indictments, right?
Yeah.
I have a feeling all these sealed indictments are starting to make a rumbling out there, and people are starting to get shook up, and they're going to start to lose the power and the strength they have, because the unity is not going to be there anymore. So maybe that's what's happening. But we're going to see. Look, if he's directing his focus out there towards what the BLM is doing and what's going on out there, there are big things happening. Look, we all know, or if we don't know, we should know, that Trump knows everything about 9/11. He is not ignorant to that at all. Remember, he lives in New York City, and he's made it clear. And here's something to think about and ask yourself the question. Why did Trump make the first thing he did, the first group of people he went to speak to when he got elected as president, the very first people was the CIA? Why is that? what's going on there? What happened there? And then, you know, so he's this guy's got it figured out, I think, and let's hope he does. Let's pray he does, and we'll see how it goes. Definitely not has a good plan.
Not only that, he was out there on the day of the...
That's right. That's how we could. That's how we got a relationship with him through them, through those people out there.
In Nevada, Las Vegas?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I think it was in Las Vegas, but I'm not really sure. One of the main people out there that was making the connection on behalf of the Bundys and the others that things were going out in Oregon and also in Nevada, that individual happens to be a member of National Liberty Alliance and made the connection with us, and that's how we got our papers to the president, and quite a bit has turned, and it's continued to this day.
Well, I'm talking
But we send it directly to the president now.
Right. I'm talking about he was out there when that massacre took place, or the
around that
flag.
Time, yes.
He was there at that time, and one of the top guys from Saudi Arabia was there also, and they had planned on hitting both of them, and they didn't. But he was there, and he's got his finger out there, I'll tell you that.
It does seem to be, yes, I agree. And all these indictments while he's out of the country is another interesting thing.
That's right.
And when's he due back, by the way? Do you know?
Tomorrow, I believe.
Tomorrow, okay.
Or later tonight.
All right, well, very interesting. See what's going on. All right.
Okay.
Final word, because we're at the end.
No, that's all I wanted. I think that's a move in the right direction. He's not out, but he's at least not in jail.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Will.
You bet.
All right, God bless everyone, and Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And again, please, don't forget, this project that we got going on for the sheriffs is the most a very important project at this point in time. This we have to get done, and we need to get it done quickly. I don't want to take a year to get this done. I'd like to take a month to get it done. It can be done. It's possible. The only thing that will hold us back on how long it takes to get the books printed and shipped, okay? And that'll be the longest. But we need the money to have them printed and shipped. And then we need the money to mail them out. So this is an important project, and we're going to connect them. This book is connecting all these sheriffs directly to a website for a further education and a specific education for themselves and their deputies and so on. So, and please don't forget, National Liberty Alliance needs your support. $5 a month or more is appreciated. Please, if you're not giving, consider giving. Good night.